Ready faces. Good morning, everyone. Welcome. I'll call this regular meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission meeting to order. If the clerk will please call the roll.
Commissioner O'Grady.
Here.
Commissioner Christensen.
Here.
Commissioner Malskow.
Here.
Commissioner White.
Here.
Chairperson Wyatt.
Here. We're privileged to have Jill Garcia here with us today, and she's going to sing for us. It's a grand old flag. If everyone will please stand, and then we'll move right into the Pledge of Allegiance afterwards. Comments on items not on the agenda. I believe I have any speaker slips. Anyone here for public comment period? Items not on the agenda? Sir, I see you raising a card. Would you like to make public comment on an item not? On number two. Okay, you can turn that into someone up here anytime. And we will get there. Seeing no one, I'll close public comment period and move to planning staff updates. Mr. Hogue and Mr. Knott, welcome. Good morning.
Well, I'll lead off. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Warren Hogue from the Department of Planning and Building. The only thing I'm going to go over today is the just to make sure we're all on the same page on the summer schedule for your meetings. We do have your regularly scheduled meetings on the second and fourth Thursdays for the rest of this month. That is May 27th, and then in June 10th and 24th. And then in July, things are less organized because room availability. Your meetings will be on July 1st and July 29th. So you will have about a four-week gap between meetings in July.
So there will be one on the 1st?
Yes.
Okay.
And we're planning to be a pretty full meeting with Shandon Community Plan Update and the housing-oriented ordinance amendments. And then July 29th is also full with a variety of items, including a continued hearing on Shandon. And then in August, you only have one meeting, and that's August 26th. And that is also pretty full at this point. Yet another opportunity for Shandon, assuming that it's not done. And then that's when Cold Canyon Landfill is scheduled to come back. And if you have some questions about that, Mr. Noll can answer that. Then in September, we're back to the second and fourth Thursdays. And then it's fairly normal for the next month or so, and then when we get into the holidays, it gets a little crazy. And we'll talk about that as we get closer. Again, if you plan any absences where you can't make a meeting, please let us know so we can plan accordingly.
I am going to be out on June 10th.
Okay.
I will be out on July 1.
All right. We'll note that. Thank you.
So, Warren, so there will not be a meet on August 12th?
Correct.
Okay.
Right. We weren't able to get the room.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Any other updates, Mr. Hogue?
That's it for me now. Ms. Griffin may have something.
Good morning, Ms. Griffin.
Good morning, Cami Griffin, County Planning. I just wanted to let the Planning Commission know that on Tuesday, the Board of Supervisors adopted the Conservation and Open Space Element Update. So it is in its adopted form. It is actually effective immediately and available on our webpage.
Well, good news there.
I looked and looked and looked for some reporting or anything, and nothing.
In the newspaper?
Yeah.
Yeah, it has not been picked up by the newspaper, so maybe they'll run something over the weekend.
Maybe. Maybe now they'll know.
Often there's a lag when they're waiting for a hole to fill, I think. It often takes till Saturday or some day later in the week when they have a space. I would hope something would be in there after all of that. Any other questions or comments?
That's it for us, unless you have any questions.
Okay. And seeing no other questions or comments from commissioners, I just had a couple of notes. Ms. Hedges had some housekeeping notes for us. So, Ms. Hedges, if you will, had some notes on how we can help out with the filing and record keeping for commission business. Do you want to just explain what's happening and how we can make the process a little easier and more efficient for you?
Thank you, Madam Chair. We're trying to go digital, and the less paper we can deal with, the better. And so when we receive digital copies to the secretary, it automatically gets forwarded to the commissioners almost immediately. Hard copies are also accepted, but the faster we get electronic copies, the faster the commissioners can get their information, and then they have more time to review it and study it.
So that's for information prior to the meetings. And information at the meetings you mentioned, too, could be in digital form to help get the full record
right, and that it will also be posted to the web as correspondence received for the record after the meeting. So that will be available to you also.
So anything in paper format, just as a housekeeping matter that comes to us, has to be hand-scanned. And all of this is getting put into the website for full transparency and good record and public access. Be in my house for quite so long, but they'll have some interesting years and decades ahead. And with that, I also wanted to note that this is RideShare's Bike Month, so wanted to take advantage of this opportunity to publicly note and spread the word that this is a commuter bike challenge during the month of May. And you can go to irideshare.org to get more information or log on miles. So, yeah, I just have some of my props here. So, again, this is RideShare's Bike Month Commuter Bike Challenge, and irideshare.org has an opportunity to log miles, and it's a chance to do a little bit to cut down on vehicle miles traveled and the gunky stuff in the air and all of that stuff. So for anybody interested, it's a nice chance to get some exercise and do a little something easy for our park. Again, irideshare.org or rideshare.org/life-in-the-bike-lane. rideshare.org/life-in-the-bike-lane for more information.
I wondered what that crash helmet was for, and I thought it was actually more for the challenging items on today's agenda.
Well, it could come in handy just in case. We have a little public debate, so maybe I could just sit here and comic relief for head protection or whatever it may be, take on a new look. So if there are no other comments, then...
Madam Chair... That's a tough act to follow, but there was one more staff update we wanted to make.
Please.
Tammy, did you want to do the honors? Or okay.
I did forget to announce that we're having the kickoff town hall meeting for the beginning of the land use element and circulation element update and our climate action plan. It's tonight in the chambers. It will start promptly at 6:30. From 6 to 6:30 is kind of the gathering time, and then it'll start promptly at 6:30, and Supervisor Hill will be speaking tonight.
Thank you, Ms. Griffin. And
well, that means you have a deadline on your meeting.
Exactly. Okay, then. We'll keep that in mind. So noted. With that, that does bring up one other housekeeping item as far as upcoming meetings and whether we may have a quorum of commissioners at those meetings. I did hear murmurings from my right that Commissioner Christensen is going tonight.
Correct.
I'm thinking of going, hoping to go. Any other commissioners thinking of going tonight? Okay, so we don't have a quorum issue there. There are some other upcoming meetings we've been invited to. Did I hear Topaz, solar information, scoping?
Yes, I think May 18th, perhaps, is when that's going to be.
And
I plan to attend that after I check my calendar and make sure it's clear.
Okay, I haven't looked at mine. Where is that?
I believe it's out in the plain at Soda Lake Road or something.
Okay, and you think of going, Commissioner Christensen?
Possibly.
Other commissioners think of going to that? Okay, so if you two would go, then I'll not go. Use that as an opportunity not to go. So
yeah,
we won't have a quorum issue then if none of the rest of us are going.
If I am unable to make that, then I will notify you so that perhaps you would go in my place.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay, any other upcoming meetings that we may be...
I just had a question on the quorum issue. For this presentation tonight, even though we're here, it's a public open house, can't we attend social events and issues of this nature without...
There is an exception. I'm Tim McNulty with the County Council's office. There is an exception for social events in the Brown Act that allows the quorum to attend things like lunches and so. Tonight, however, is the kickoff for something that will be coming to you. And so for that reason, it's probably best if we don't have a quorum of the Planning Commission there to hear comments from the staff and one of the supervisors about it.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. McNulty. Clear enough?
Yes.
As mud.
I just want to thank all of you here for the group card that you sent me in my absence for my surgery. I enjoyed it so much. It was a real morale booster for me. So thank you so much.
Just so you didn't rip out your stitches laughing there.
We're glad to have you back here.
Well, thank you.
Okay, with that and seeing no one else with any items, we'll move to our consent agenda items. We have a couple. So any comment? Anybody like to pull any of those items?
Don't we need to pull the March 25th minutes because there was an error in the posting?
Yes.
They're missing a page?
We do.
Yeah.
So we need to pull item B, the minutes for March 25th. Any other comments or questions or...
Nope, I'm going to move the consent agenda except for item B, which is pulled.
Okay, second on that motion?
Second.
Okay, seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. With that, we've approved the consent agenda, and we can move on to our regular hearing items. So with that, we will move on to our hearing item number one. If the clerk will please tell us what that is.
Continued hearing to consider a request by...
Excuse me, and back to you, Mr. Conger.
Okay, the project before your commission this morning is a request for a tentative tract map and a conditional use permit to allow an agricultural cluster subdivision. This is a major agricultural cluster subdivision, which means they're entitled to a 100% density bonus, but they're also required to preserve 95% of the site as an agricultural use. The project would result in the creation of 18 residential lots varying in size from about 1 to 3 acres, and those 18 residential lots together would comprise 5% of the site area, and then a single agricultural parcel which would cover 95% of the site area. And I should point out that presently the site has 5 legal underlying parcels, so that would actually be consolidating the agricultural area under a single parcel. The density calculation that this subdivision is based on is based on the ability to subdivide down to 40-acre parcels. They're using the soils and capability test, which is one of the two tests that you can use to determine the number of parcels in an agricultural subdivision. The other test is the use test, which is based on the actual agricultural production that's occurring. With the soils and capability test, the density is determined based on the ability for the soil to produce intensive row crops. So the better class soils allow for smaller parcels. And as this is an agricultural cluster subdivision that would potentially qualify for 9 parcels under a standard subdivision, they're entitled to 100% density bonus based on having 2 single-family residences on each of those 9 standard parcels. So together that results in 18 residential cluster parcels. This is a vicinity map of the project site. It's located on the south side of Estrella Road, about a mile east of Jardine Road in the Paso Robles area. And this is the land use category map. The site is entirely within the agriculture land use category. There are a couple combining designations, one of which is the airport review combining designation, and a portion of the site is also in the flood hazard combining designation because it's in the floodplain of the Estrella River. And you can also see from this map that the site is adjacent to an area of residential development on about 1 acre parcels, which is called the Jardine Tract, and that's zoned residential suburban, and that's inside of Paso Robles urban reserve line, but outside of the city limits. This is an aerial image of the project site. And the project site is outlined in black. The urban reserve line is shown with a red dotted line. Paso Robles city limit line has a yellow line over here. And you can see this Jardine Tract area. It's comprised of about 425 lots, each of which is served by on-site well and septic. The project would involve locating the 18 residential lots towards the southwest portion of the site, adjacent to the Jardine Tract. So from a location standpoint, this is a good location to place the residences in. The site itself is also a good location for an agricultural cluster parcel because it's adjacent to an urban reserve line. So from a design and location standpoint, this is a fairly good cluster project. However, one of the major issues, water, which we'll discuss soon, is the reason why we're before your commission with the recommendation for denial. And this is another view of that tentative tract map. Again, you can see the 18 lots and the one large agricultural lot. And so this shows it with colors. The 18 residential lots are covered in that blue area, and that represents 5% of the site area. And then the larger agricultural parcel is in green. There are also two envelopes, one envelope for ranch support headquarters, which would be where any farm support residences and agricultural accessory buildings would go. And then there's another envelope located towards the center of the site, about 2.5 acres in size, which would be where any future agricultural processing facility, such as a winery, would go. And then the red lines show the road circulation in the track. So there would be two access points on Estrella Road, and it would be essentially a loop road. So the purpose of agricultural cluster subdivisions is to preserve agricultural land. And you can't talk about agricultural preservation without talking about water resources, because water is so integral to agricultural use. The agricultural cluster subdivision has a required finding on water adequacy, and water also gets analyzed through the environmental review process. Additionally, we have some general plan policies. Agricultural Element Policy 11 speaks to preserving water for agricultural uses, and the idea is that any development that would occur in agricultural areas would not usurp the agricultural water for non-agricultural purposes. And the conservation element, and I'm referring to the old conservation element, also has a groundwater management policy, which more or less mirrors Agriculture Element Policy 11. Regarding the required finding, which, by the way, is unique to agricultural cluster subdivisions, no other types of development require a specific finding affirming the sufficiency of water resources. In order to approve a project, the commission must make a finding that there is sufficient water resources to support not only the existing agricultural production and the future residential water demand used by FUGRO. So from consideration of all these reports, the conclusion that staff has reached that is that at best, the long-term sustainability of the water resources in the groundwater basin are uncertain. And so here's a list of some of the studies we consulted. There was a FUGRO study in 2002 and a follow-up in 2010. Todd Engineers did pumping analysis in 2007 and 2009. And then there was a report done by CLEAF in 2009 specific to this project site. And essentially the conclusion from these reports is that the basin is approaching overdraft. Specifically, the FUGRO report from 2010 indicates that we're close to 99% of perennial yields currently. We also know that the Estrella area, the area where this project is located, has rapidly declining groundwater, and the CLEAF report specifically showed a drop of about 87 feet over an 11-year period on the site. And so, again, our conclusion is, at best, the long-term sustainability is uncertain. And with regards to that finding, the finding that requires that your commission affirm the sufficiency of water resources, staff feels that uncertainty is enough information to say that you can't make that affirmation. The Estrella area of decline, that's the area where the groundwater levels have been dropping. That's centered east of Paso Robles along the Highway 46 corridor. The FUGRO report from 2002 reports drops of 60 to 70 feet. As I mentioned, this site specifically reported a drop of about 87 feet over an 11-year period. We did get correspondence at the March 25 hearing, a written correspondence from a neighboring property owner who reported having to lower their well pump because of dropping groundwater levels. There were maps produced by both FUGRO and Todd Engineers during the process, and those maps seek to show where that area of decline is. They're a good reference, but because of the level of detail, they're not at a site-specific level. It's a good area to figure out if your site might be affected by it, but site-specific data, like the data we have on this site from the CLEAF report, would confirm whether or not a site is in the area of decline. And so this map shows a composite of both the FUGRO and Todd Engineer maps of where the most dramatic declines have occurred, and you can see a portion of the project site overlies that area. The project will add additional non-agricultural water demand. We're estimating about 22 to 30 acre feet per year for the residential component of the project site. Additionally, we have to account for the ability to irrigate additional acreage, which is, we need to account for that because that's how they're achieving their density. And we anticipate about 107 to 114 acre feet per year with that added agricultural use. So the applicants did prepare a few mitigation options, about four different mitigation options. And the idea was to seek to offset about 11 acre feet per year based on a restricted residential landscaping requirements. Some of the concerns that staff identified with the mitigation options that the applicants have prepared is that, first of all, it's not offsetting enough water. We think that the offset should be a full offset of the residential water use, not based on landscaping restrictions. We have concerns with imposing restrictions on agriculture. One of the proposals would have involved applying requirements to the agricultural practices occurring on the site, and there's a bit of a concern there with regards to policy and compliance with Agricultural Element Policy 11, which states that we should not be accommodating residential development at the detriment of agricultural water. Staff has also concerns with some of the enforceability and long-term monitoring of some of the mitigation proposals that the applicants have submitted, specifically proposals involving wheeling of water from Nacimiento Lake to serve Paso Robles city users and conservation practices within the city of Paso Robles as well. Staff has concerns with regards to the longevity of the mitigation because the mitigation would need to be perpetual. It would need to last for the life of the project as long as those residences are being inhabited. And then finally, staff has some concerns about the relationship to the declining groundwater. If mitigation is done elsewhere in the basin, we're not certain that that would offset the drops in groundwater that are occurring specifically in the Estrella sub-area. So again, the general plan policies that staff identified included Agriculture Policy 11 regarding protection of water for agricultural use. There's a policy in the 1974 conservation element, which this project is subject to because it was vested prior to the adoption of the new conservation element. And that policy limits subdivisions in areas with rapidly declining groundwater. And then Policy 9 from the 1974 conservation element is more or less the same thing as Agricultural Element Policy 11, which expresses protection of water for agricultural purposes. So we had a few questions raised about why we're here with a recommendation for denial before the environmental review process is completed. When a finding for approval cannot be made, a project needs to be taken forward with a recommendation subdivision. In order to override that Class 1 impact, you'd have to make a finding stating that there are issues with water resources, but there are overriding considerations that warrant the approval of this project, and at the same time, you'd still be required to make that required finding that there are adequate water resources. So that's a potential conflict. Regarding the Paso Robles groundwater basin study, this is an ongoing process. We started this about 10 years ago, and there have been a number of reports that have been produced, as we cited earlier. This process is continuous. As the studies are done, each study recommends that an additional level of review be commissioned. And so there's no real end date in sight here. This is this groundwater basin obviously has issues that warranted our looking into it, and we'll continue to look into this until we have a satisfactory mitigation program established and the water resource concerns are no longer as salient. Your commission originally considered to draft a resource management study in May of 2009, and that study recommended denial of any subdivision that created a net increase of non-agricultural water usage within the Estrella area of concern. Additional studies have been done since then, but they seem to confirm the information that we had when we made that recommendation in May of 2009. So any future recommendations as part of the resource capacity study, you will probably be seeing a similar recommendation, if not a stronger recommendation on this. Again, staff wants to indicate that the record shows that that affirmation of sufficient water resources is pretty unlikely based on all of the studies we have here. So our conclusions are that there's not enough information to make a solid conclusion affirming the long-term sustainability of the water resource. We know that the groundwater basin is approaching perennial yield. We know that there's rapidly declining groundwater localized in this Estrella area of concern. Because the record indicates uncertainty, Staff would recommend that the commission not affirm the sufficiency of water resources, and therefore the project needs to be considered for denial. And so staff's recommendation is that your commission deny conditional use permit sub-2006-00138, investing tentative tract map 2905, based on the findings in Exhibits A and B of the March 25 staff report. And that concludes my presentation. I'm available for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Conger. Any questions at this point for staff?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to hold most of my comments and questions, but I did have one that came up, and thank you, Mr. Conger, for the very thorough report. Mentioned the Jardine tract has 425 lots. Do you know how many of those are developed and built out?
I don't know off the top of my head. A number of them are actually, it's held as a two-acre piece but has two underlying lots, so at any time those could be conveyed separately and developed separately. But I'm not certain about how many lots there have actually been fully developed.
Okay. I would hazard a guess that of the assessor's parcels, which might be combined lots, it's probably more than 90% developed.
Yes, just visiting the area, it seems to be developed out. So, okay. Thank you.
Other questions or clarification at this point from staff? Okay, with that, thank you again, Mr. Conger. And I'll open it up to the applicant. I have a couple of speaker slips in from the applicant. Ms. Kirk, how would you like to handle this? How much time is each speaker going to take?
Good morning, Chairwoman Wyatt. My name is Jamie Kirk, and I'm representing the Resource Land Holdings Group. I think how we'd like to handle it is I'm going to start the presentation, and then we will have Joe Scalmanini will be present, our water expert, to take on the bulk of the presentation.
Okay.
Because it will relate, most of the discussion today will relate to water.
Okay, and you can do this within 15 minutes or?
Yeah, we should be able to do it within 15 minutes. What we may do is start with the 10 minutes, see if we can capture it all in the 10 minutes, allow for public comment, and then finish his comments at up with our five-minute rebuttal time.
Sum up. Okay. Thank you. So we.
Madam Chair, I think that his comments should not be given in rebuttal. If he's going to make comments that are pertinent to the project, he ought to make them now so that the public can hear them. I would prefer not to have new comments come in on rebuttal that the public can't respond to.
Okay. Under that light, we'd like to have the entire 15 minutes be able to use it in our initial presentation, and if there's some time left over, we'll use that, you know, that extra minute or two for rebuttal at the end.
Okay, sounds good. We'll come back then.
Great.
Thank you, Ms. Kirk.
Okay, and I would like to start the presentation for thanking the Commission for the opportunity for the continuance from the March hearing date. I really appreciate that. I know that's not a practice of your Commission, but it was important that we have our water expert here. So thank you. I'd like to start on that positive note on thanking you for that. Can we hold?
That's not what she wants to see. That recommendation isn't what she's looking for.
There has been a lot of discussion at your board or at your commission over the last years about ag clusters, and you know this project really kind of meets that wish list of what we've heard come out of your commission. The lots are compact in form. They're clustered adjacent to the existing residential development. We're adjacent to an urban reserve line. The lots are separated, physically separated. For Commissioner White, who was able to come out to the site, there is a physical separation between the lots and the agricultural use. And from a farming perspective, with the experience of the on-site manager, the clustered lots are located on the least productive soils of the site. And this project successfully preserves the site's existing agriculture, and it results in a reduction in home sites, but that's what's currently allowed under a no-project alternative, kind of the existing, what's allowed under existing zoning. Under existing zoning, under ministerial permits, we could build up to 26 houses. That would give two primary dwellings for each of the existing parcels, because each of those existing parcels are over 20 acres in size. And then based on the existing agriculture, there would be a total of 16 farm supports allowed on the site. So this cluster project actually results in 8 fewer residences, which again results in less water use. And it provides for permanent protection, because with those existing lots, the existing agriculture could be fragmented.
Ms. Kirk, just before you move on, does this preclude the farm support quarters from being built?
The farm support quarters are allowed only within that very small envelope that's shown on the map, the 2.5-acre ranch headquarters site. So they would be limited to how many farm support quarters you could locate within that envelope.
Okay, but some number could still be located.
Yeah, but you know, I'd say reasonably you could probably do one or two whenever you're looking at, because in that envelope is where all the structures need to be located, the barns and anything related to the ag use that isn't ag processing. We have that other envelope for ag processing, but barns and farm support ranching operations would be within that envelope.
Okay.
Again, this exhibit shows in the hard dashed lines the location of the existing underlying lots as it relates to the agricultural use. We have been in process on this project for over 4 years. I think we've successfully resolved many concerns that were brought up regarding the resource areas on this project. This project has gone through many iterations, including a significant reduction in density to the 18 units. As a point of clarification, we do qualify for 20 units based on the land use ordinance because we have some Class 2 soils that are irrigated with the blueberries. But in working with the Ag Department and wanting to have full support of the Ag Department, we looked at, instead of allowing two primary residences for the Class 2 soils, we looked at reducing that to no density bonus for those Class 2 soils. So we're at 18 units. And that was, again, to get full support of the Ag Department because we knew that was important coming before your board. So we thought we were coming forward last year with a recommendation of approval for this project. With all the work that we've done to date, we had the Ag Department probably knows the site better than any that he's worked on. He's been out there several times, and we thought we were coming forward with a recommendation of approval until last year whenever the draft RMS study came out. And at that time, staff raised some concerns about water use and the condition of the basin and how it relates to our project. We knew that we couldn't solve the basin issue. We couldn't, it was going to take some time. The jury was still out. We knew that there was going to be some processing time to work through the information on the basin. So we met with staff several times, and what they asked us to do is look at coming up with some mitigation measures, some off-site or on-site mitigation measures to offset our water use. So we looked at that. We proposed a number of on-site and off-site solutions. We've had those solutions looked at through independent professionals, and they've found that those are feasible solutions. The mitigations that we've provided would directly offset our project's impact on the sub-basin. We've talked to the city of Paso Robles to see if we could work with them on offsets for our water use, work with them on city projects, and they were more than willing to work with us. And we were really looking at this in a positive light, that our project was coming forward as kind of a test case of how are we going to look at water use in the basin in the future, and how can we do off-site mitigation as well as on-site mitigation. We were frankly excited that we were going to be on the forefront of all of this. So the off-site mitigation projects that we looked at were the water conservation projects within the city of Paso Robles working with the city, private user conservation projects, again in the city, or the purchase of Lake Nacimiento water. And then for on-site, we looked at agricultural conservation measures that were infrastructure-related. So some of them were management, but the bulk of them were infrastructure-related, so looking at installing new irrigation systems that would reduce overall water use, so that the burden of those mitigations could be put on the applicant right now and not on a future farmer. And then we also looked at reservoir linings, because that was another measure. That
presentation, so you have a bit more.
Well, good morning. My name is Joe Scalmanini. I'm with the consulting engineering firm of Ludorf and Scalmanini Consulting Engineers. We're in Woodland in the Sacramento Valley up north. We were originally asked to look at feasibility of the mitigation measures to which Ms. Kirk had just referred, which led to some examination of groundwater conditions in the area. As part of that, all of which is summarized in two letters that we've addressed to the applicant, but which I understand are part of your record, that we've tried to go through the history of the kinds of reports that were referenced by staff. And I guess, well, it's a little awkward to say, but fundamentally, focusing primarily on the most recent one, which is now a month old, this groundwater basin update report, there is no reference in there to approaching overdraft. There is no reference to projected overdraft. If you read the report carefully, what it says is that over the last 12 years that the groundwater basin has significantly recovered by a couple hundred thousand acre feet of groundwater in storage that didn't used to be there in 1998. What it also projects is over the next 15 years that the groundwater basin is going to benefit and accrue storage in excess of 400,000 acre feet, which is anything but a projection of approaching overdraft. Now, it is difficult to read that and comprehend it in light of what's summarized in the figure briefly that's on the screen right now, which is that groundwater levels have been declining, as was referenced before, in this Paso Robles groundwater basin, and particularly in this particular area, and focused in the area of the city. So there is a very fundamental disconnect between what's been reported to the county as the state of the groundwater basin and the status, where pumping is measured in thousands of acre feet per year, less than and projected to be thousands of acre feet, meaning on the order of 5,000 acre feet, less than the reported perennial yield to the basin. There's a fundamental disconnect between that, which says that groundwater levels should be going up, which is what this most recent updated report says, and what is actually observed, which is that groundwater levels have been going down. So, from the perspective of the project, what we've done is look at what's portrayed on the screen right now, included in our report, which is a summary of how much groundwater levels have been depressed in the area in spite of the reported surpluses in the yield of the basin, and suggested to the applicant that what they should do, it's appropriate to do, and what they've proposed to do, as just summarized by Ms. Kirk, is to mitigate the small amount of projected water requirements. We would suggest the net amount, or at least the net amount, and that's discussed in some detail what we've reported, and I can expand on numbers if you'd like, but that fundamentally, by doing the kinds of things that she had listed up there a couple minutes ago, that you can offset pumping by others or for agricultural use on the property, and both are focused exactly in or close to where measured groundwater level declines have occurred. And by reducing pumping, then you begin to go, quote-unquote, in the right direction of reducing that pumping, which reduces the drawdown on the groundwater levels, which reduces the stress that is producing what's actually measured as contrasted to what's reported to the county at this point in time. Simply summarized, read the county reports, or the reports to the county. They say there's a surplus available to supply water on a projected basis into the future that goes 15 years down the road. If you look at what's actually been measured in the basin, that's not consistent with what's reported, but nevertheless, the reports speak to a surplus, the measurements speak to a decline, and mitigation by reducing pumping stress in the field, so to speak, would tend to offset the decline that's actually been measured. So that's going a couple minutes, you know, not a couple minutes, but a few seconds beyond the time that was left.
You have a bit more if you need another minute or two. We allow a little more. Setting our clock is a little problematic for exact time.
It's okay.
Apologies for that. But if you need another minute or two to summarize.
No, I mean, I think I've said it as thoroughly as I can. I could, you know, I'd end up repeating myself if I'd be on.
Okay, then. We don't want that. So.
No.
Thank you.
Sure.
With that, the end of your prepared comments then from the applicant. So with that, seeing no immediate questions from fellow commissioners, I'll open it up to the public for comment. I have a couple of speaker slips. Anyone else out there who'd like to get a speaker slip in on this? I have just received three so far. Any other speaker slips floating around there? I thought there might be a few more. Okay, no seeing none. I have Tim Cleese, then Sue Luft, then Della Barrett. If anyone else would like to speak to this item, get your slip in. So Mr. Cleese, first 3 minutes, and then Ms. Luff. And Mr. Cleese has written, contributed to this report, so if you need...
issues are that we need to reduce pumpage in this area, and water conservation, however way you can come about getting it, is going to be a very, very important part of that basin management issues. Just kind of a general comment on how our report was reviewed through the staff. There are some numbers that they've used that attribute and that they've calculated based on some numbers that we have that are not exactly the same. The general bottom line is that without conservation, their numbers are not much different than what we've used. But the project is proposing the conservation measures which will actually reduce pumpage for agriculture and also in trying to keep the water numbers down for the domestic project. One of the things that we wanted to recognize is that some of the numbers that they've used for residential water use are reflective of another ag subcluster over in Edna Valley, which had certain CCNR requirements. One of their requirements is that they can't irrigate more than 0.8 acres. This project really would limit the irrigation of landscape and exterior use, exterior outdoors use to 0.12 acres. So that's some of the differences between how we come up with our domestic water use numbers and how the county staff has applied what they thought was appropriate for that demand calculation. The other difference in calculations of water use on the project is that we've used some of the actual water uses for the vineyards, which is less than what the county spreadsheets calculate. And so there's no point in discussing current water uses. You want to look at change, and you want to look at reduction of water uses. But there are some differences there. But bottom line, water conservation is going to be a very important part of this project. It has to be put into a context of the overall groundwater conditions in the area. There are some improvements that will be occurring in the area, and we'll just have to see how that goes. But if this project can help in that area, it would be a benefit to the basin. That's about it.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Cleese?
Yes, Mr. Cleese.
Yes, sir.
You've done studies, hydrogeological studies in this area, correct?
Yes.
Okay. More than one?
Many.
Many. Okay. The most recent one?
Currently we're working under the City of Paso Robles project for groundwater management in the Paso Robles groundwater basin. I also was partner, we're part of the group that did the groundwater study of the Paso Robles basin in 2002. We're also doing work for other clients within their overall basin. We did a I could go on and on, but
so the City of Paso Robles has been a client.
Yes, City of Paso Robles has been.
Has the County of San Luis Obispo been a client?
That's correct, also.
And has the applicant been a client?
That's correct, also.
You get around, sir.
Well, it's an important resource, and we're happy to be a part of the management of the water resources in this area.
Thank you for your candid responses.
Thank you.
Other questions for Mr. Cleese while he's up? Okay, thank you, sir. Ms. Luft, followed by Della Barrett.
Hi, my name is Sue Luft. My husband and I own a residence and small vineyard within the Crescent sub-area of the Paso Robles Groundwater Basin. I'm vice chair of the Water Resources Advisory Committee, a member of the RACS, Paso Robles Groundwater Basin Resource Capacity Subcommittee, and a sub-area representative on the Paso Robles Groundwater Basin Advisory Committee.
Excuse me, Ms. Luft. Given all that, since you are here representing the advisory group, if you do need a little more than 3 minutes, 5 minutes is allowed.
However, since the RAC did not review this specific project, I'm speaking on my own based on my knowledge of the issues.
Okay, so just 3 minutes then.
Okay. But although the RAC has not reviewed this project, we have reviewed several studies regarding the Paso Robles Groundwater Basin. Planning staff did an excellent job of summarizing the groundwater issues and responding to the assertions of the applicant's consultant. We could go back and forth at length about the various assumptions that have been used on water use. However, the fact is that the groundwater basin is in a state of decline. The basin's essentially at its safe yield, as shown by several studies, which have been presented to your commission. Pumping's continued to increase and well levels have continued to drop. Consistent with the submitted reports, the water level in our well has decreased over 70 feet in the past 12 years. We're in the midst of developing a stakeholder-driven to the Paso Robles Groundwater Basin Advisory Committee for several years, and I'm a sub-area representative. I'm speaking for myself. And I've studied the Fugro and Todd and Cleith reports. on the groundwater basin supply and demand and decline. And based on what I've learned, I have three concerns about the proposed ag cluster subdivision. They are water, water, and water. And I think the staff has done a good job of laying out the compelling evidence, which is based on recent and thorough studies. The applicant is basically saying that because of water conservation efforts elsewhere in the basin, and if nothing else changes, then there's a possibility that there might be a smidgen of water unused, and they want that water. But as Ms. Love pointed out, there are a lot of legal, other legal lots already that really have the rights ahead of this applicant. They just haven't applied for them yet. And we want to be sure that there's enough water for everyone. So the existing lots' supply of water must be assured before additional lots should be created. I urge you to accept your staff's recommendation and deny this project. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Barrett. Anyone else wishing to speak to this item? Okay, seeing no one, I'll bring it back if the applicant would like to make any final comments.
Good morning, I'm Ty Green representing the applicant, and I'd like to wrap up with some comments. But one thing I'd like to point out is there was some, both the comments basically referred to who's entitled to use the water, which is really kind of a water rights issue. But the project, as it sits with no project, will use more water than this project will. If this land is fully developed with agriculture, which is what it will be, you're going to use more water than the proposed project. So when you're looking at balancing this, I think you need to keep that in mind. I also think what needs to be kept in mind is that what we're here doing is basically rejecting a project, or there's a recommendation to reject a project without having adequate information about the project. It's a lot of what I heard about the reasons to reject the project were, well, there might be when we get there, this might be what we find, or this is probably what we'll find, or this is probably what we'll see. But I think the testimony of Mr. Scalamanini and Mr. Cleith shows that this needs to be looked at, and there are ways to make this work. The mitigation measures that were proposed, the off-site mitigation measures, particularly by the applicant, were rejected out of hand by county staff. Working with the city of Paso Robles, the staff report basically said, well, that's probably duplicating what the city is doing anyway, and it won't add anything. Well, that needs to be looked at, and it hasn't been looked at. I don't believe this is the point that you can reject those mitigation measures in that context. The other thing I wanted to point out was that when they talk about the increase in water use in this project, there was some conditions proposed with the project, such as limiting the 5,000 square feet of irrigated coverage. And that basically the position is, well, that just won't work. And I think there's a lot of the rejection of the mitigation conditions here. We're rejected because of the context, but we can't monitor those, or we're not going to monitor those. Well, almost every project has conditions of approval that require monitoring. And if the concern is that, well, the county doesn't have the resources to monitor it, there are ways to put that, or the onus back on the project so that the monitoring, the laboring ore of the monitoring and the resources that come from the project applicant. So to reject mitigation measures out of hand because it requires monitoring, I think, is inconsistent with state law, and it makes it virtually impossible for a project to ever go forward. I would propose, looking at the way that this was analyzed, this project was analyzed, is that basically what this is a de facto moratorium on any kind of development in the Paso Robles groundwater basin, because every project is going to have some kind of net gain in water usage, and if you're not allowed to offset it by mitigation measures that do offset, or at least to take a look at those mitigation measures to see if they work, you're not going to have anything that goes on up there. And I don't think that's the intent of the intent of the ag cluster ordinance was to protect agricultural land. And I think, as Jamie Kirk pointed out, this is an excellent balance of how that works here. You're protecting 95% of the property for permanent agriculture, and yet I think the water usage would be, as Mr. Cleith and Mr. Scalmanita pointed out, the water usage is going to be a plus over what the project could be developed as. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Green. A question specifically for Mr. Green?
Yes.
Commissioner O'Grady.
Hi, Mr. Green. Do you believe that an environmental impact report would answer the questions that you've raised with your testimony here today?
Should, yes.
Okay. Other questions for Mr. Green? Okay, with that, thank you. I'll bring it back to staff. Any comments then on what you've heard from the applicant or the public?
Yes, I did have a few comments on Mr. Green's rebuttals. The first one was regarding irrigation limitations. The applicants did propose to put pretty strict limitations on. We don't believe that it would be prudent for us to use a reduced water demand number to mitigate off of that. I think we need to look at the entire water demand and apply the mitigations based on that, and perhaps the mitigations would involve some landscaping, but I don't think we should rely on the landscaping mitigations then mitigating based on those numbers. Another comment came up regarding a moratorium, that we're imposing a moratorium by setting a precedent on this project. I want to point out that the finding for affirming the sufficiency of water resources is something that is unique to agricultural cluster subdivisions. A standard agricultural subdivision would not require that finding. A winery would not require that finding. Obviously, we would be analyzing water resources as part of the environmental review process for those other types of projects, but this is the only type of project that actually has a finding regarding the sufficiency of water resources. And actually, as I did mention, one of the recommendations is a potential moratorium on any new development that would involve an increase in net non-agricultural water use within the Estrella area of concern. So that's something that may be forthcoming in the future. It's not there yet, but it could be in the future. Regarding the mitigation programs and monitoring and enforcement, enforceability is a requirement of mitigation. We as the county are required to develop a mitigation monitoring and reporting program, and we need to account for how we're going to do that that monitoring and reporting. Some of the programs that are being requested here, the water offset programs, the wheeling of Nacimiento water, these are things that are typically undertaken in an agency such as a municipal agency that has a water conservation staff, a staff that's dedicated to water conservation. And we don't have that for non-municipal users. We don't have staffing to monitor this stuff. So either the applicants would need to provide significant funding to account for all that staffing, or we'd have to wait until an actual mitigation program gets developed, which would be a likely outcome as a result of the management program for the Paso Robles groundwater basin. We'll probably have a mitigation and offset program developed as a result of that. And in fact, we invited the applicants to withdraw their application and wait for that management program to come forward and apply whatever offset program would then be in place. But we, right now, that's unknown. We're not sure when that program is going to get underway. And we have an application in front of us today, and so we need to act on that. And that's the conclusion of my responses.
Thank you, Mr. Conger. Other questions, then? Yep. We'll bring it to the commission. Let's just start with the commissioner from the district. Okay. Commissioner White.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I certainly understand the points on all sides, and, you know, with the monitoring of the agricultural water use and the landscape use and so forth, but I guess my primary question is, we just implemented, the day that this was up for the original hearing, we had an expansion of the Sea Pines Golf Resort in Los Osos, and, you know, I know that this basin is in a lot of trouble, but Los Osos is also, and we were able to make a finding that by allowing a project to go forward, it was actually beneficial to the basin. Now, I know that on the surface seems contradictory and counterintuitive, but Mr. Cleet made that exact statement. What I believe he said was, this project can help in that area, and he was referring to the decline. And so my question, I guess, is why we can't implement a retrofitting program, a 2-to-1 offset, like we did in the Los Osos area. And it would give Commissioner White an opportunity to get volume control independent shower valves. So,
I'm looking for that opportunity.
So besides the landscape and the agricultural element, those could be also beneficial, but that would be icing on the cake, so to speak. That would be in addition to the 2-to-1. And the reason I asked the question earlier about how many were built out in the Jardine area, another issue that comes up, that this made the retrofitting proposed by the applicant in the Paso Robles area may not be beneficial, but a lot of these residents in the Jardine area are older residents that I believe would be available for retrofitting. And I don't know the numerical quantities that's used in Los Osos for 18 residences. But that's my question, is why we can't implement something along those lines.
And I don't know the specifics of the Sea Pines proposal, but I do know that the Los Osos area has community water providers rather than individual wells. And they also have an existing retrofit program that's built into our ordinance. So those are two different things that we don't have in place on this project site that may come out of the groundwater basin, but that the policy infrastructure, so to speak, is not in place in the Paso Robles groundwater area.
I understand that. I guess what I was hoping would maybe be a possibility that could be used as a model for the applicant to emulate and maybe to copy what's done in the Los Osos area to offset that 2-to-1 ratio. And then whatever they did in the agricultural conservation would be an additional benefit. So I guess what I'm saying is it's hard for me. I understand both sides of the point, and I just go back to Mr. Cleese's point that this is an opportunity to
apply that to individual projects, but doing these on a project-by-project basis can be problematic from an implementation standpoint. And on top of that, the numbers, I don't know that we're necessarily in agreement with using the numbers that the applicants have provided on the basis that our experience has shown that that relying solely on landscaping as mitigation is problematic, and that water resources are really a different animal than other things like biological resources. You really need to mitigate by design rather than applying these kind of policy recommendations like a policy of limiting landscaping, because it's really hard to make sure that people adhere to those policies over the life of a project.
Well, I understand all that. I think I made my opening remarks that I tend to agree with that the landscaping, the agricultural would be icing on the cake, so to speak, that we would need to require the mitigation to be more tangible. And as far as Mr. Green spoke to, that these mitigations could be put on, the burden could be put on the applicant. And I know, as an old plumbing contractor in the Templeton area, I spearheaded retrofit programs, and we certified as the plumbing contractor that these BOFO toilets were replaced, were put in to replace 3.5 or 5 gallon use toilets. 1.5 gallons were installed. So there are ways that the burden can be put on the applicant. So again, to me, I see it as an opportunity that we can, as everyone else has already pointed out, that we can maintain this large agricultural parcel in production, and it's an opportunity to eliminate the other alternatives that could even be more of a distress to the basin.
Commissioner White, I think you've hit the question right there, and that's what has to come back to the commission to decide, so that's our discussion point. I do see a light on to my right, Commissioner Christensen. You want to weigh in?
Well, I didn't know if you had actually more questions or if you...
No, that was my question. That's okay. Why we can't try to model something after what
right.
we did in Los
Angeles. Okay. So let's bring it backwards then, and you've got that out there, but let's bring it back to clarifying questions first so that we make sure we get those answered, and then we can move on to the discussion that we're going to need to have.
Yeah, let me just start off by saying first, I think that your points are excellent, Commissioner White, but I think that what staff is saying is that yes, and I think applicant said, and what we all can recognize is that yes, a project like this, if you just look at it overall, does have a great potential to not only reduce water usage but preserve agriculture. But what our ordinances say is that this is ag land, not Sea Pines Golf Course, not recreational land, not residential land, but ag land. And ag land policies and ag cluster policies say first we have to make a finding that there's adequate water resources. We can't design a project that does that mitigation for it. We have to make that finding, and that's what I understand is where the problem is. If this was not an ag cluster subdivision proposal on ag land, your point would be totally right, and we could go forward. But it is on ag land, and it is an ag cluster proposal, and we don't necessarily, we can argue about that, we don't necessarily have the right to do that. So anyway, that's not where I really want to go to, because I'm still...
Can I respond to that just briefly?
But before we get into this debate,
I want to
make sure some technical questions are answered, because these are the questions, but let's just make sure, I believe there may be a few kind of technical
questions. Well, on that point, as the commissioner from the district, I would have a tremendous amount of technical questions, and Mr. Klee touched on that too, the contradiction that shows a surplus in the basin with the decline of the levels. And if you remember when we had a study session on the first groundwater report before this update, I rejected it in its entirety because of those contradictions. Specifically in Atascadero, the groundwater was supposed to be in depletion, and it was bubbling up out of the ground, according to Atascadero Mutual Water Company. So you know, without getting into all the technical details of the reports, which, you know, I don't know how much validity we can even put into these reports, because there seems to be these contradictions, and the last paragraph of the update is a disclaimer. And my comment said, your guess is as good as mine. So, you know, it appears to me that we do have an issue with the groundwater in this particular area, but again, this is an opportunity. So I'm not going to get into all the technical questions and arguing back and forth, because I'm not sure how reliable all these issues are in the first place.
Okay, so given that sort of statement out there, are there some technical questions from other commissioners that we want to get into?
I have many technical questions. Okay. I was going to say that part first.
So you had several. I know Gene does too. Gene waved first here earlier. Mr. Milska.
My question is on farm support housing. They say that under the existing situation, I think they said that they could have 6 or 8. Is that correct? And what would it be under the cluster development? They said, well, they have a small area for farm support quarters. What is there a difference between what they have now and what they're hoping for?
Presently, they have 5 legal underlying lots, which theoretically each of those could be developed with 2 primary residences,
okay.
Although our analysis of agricultural parcels shows that really only about 7 or 8% of agricultural parcels ever get developed with a second primary. On top of that, they can also qualify for, I believe, as they pointed out, about 16.
Limit the total building size to 2.5 acres. So that might be a limiting factor on the number of farm support quarters under the cluster division. Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions, Commissioner Milska? No. Okay, thank you. Over here, then, Commissioner Grady and Christensen have some. Who wants to go next?
All right, well, no, I think I'm just going to wait because,
okay, Commissioner O'Grady then.
I could spend all morning asking questions. I'm not really sure they're going to be useful.
Well,
you.
I won't take all morning,
you
so
think
I'll
there may be a useful answer to be found.
Mr. Conger, reading the staff report, it seemed to me that your only concern here about the project is water. Is that correct?
That is the only concern we focused on. There's probably some other minor things that we could have resolved as conditions.
Okay, but water's the salient
water's
one.
Water's the primary issue. That's the reason we're here before your commission today.
Okay, and the conundrum of basin recovery in the face of dropping well levels, do you have any insights into or explanation for why that contradiction?
Yeah, I'm not a hydrogeologist or an engineer, so I'm not certain why there is an increase in storage projected while the groundwater levels continue to decline in the Estrella area. I can't answer.
You haven't read any answer to that question in the report?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay.
We do have county staff stepping up. Did you have an answer to that question?
Hi, Courtney Howard, County Public Works. I was the project manager for doing the water balance update that Fugro just produced in 2010. And while I'm myself, I am not a hydrogeologist either, and I want to disclaim also that I live on Jardine Road. But I wanted to try to give you my understanding of the approach taken in that water balance update. Basically, they looked at inflows and outflows over a period of time. You know, basically, we have the data from 1981 through 2009. And so in looking at a water balance, if inflows exceed outflows over that long period of time, then essentially you're not overdrafting. You're not taking out more than what's putting in on a long-term basis. And so the evaluation shows that over that long-term period, 400,000 acre-feet of, there has been an increase in a 400,000 acre-feet of storage in the basin. Therefore, since it's not a negative number, zero, we're not an overdraft, which is what the report concludes. It says that with that amount of storage increase over time, over that period of time, we're operating within about 94 to 99% based on the assumptions of the perennial yield. So I hope that kind of helps to explain, you know, in essence, over that long period of time, if it was zero or less, then the report would conclude that we're exceeding our inflows.
So perhaps also there are some geological conditions in this area of the basin that might contribute to dropping well levels there versus elsewhere in the basin. Is that part of the answer, perhaps?
Right. If you look at it together, the method of looking at groundwater levels over time, together with this inflow versus outflows, you'll see that, you know, looking at the declines we're seeing in certain areas of the basin coupled with the evaluation that we're 94 to 99% of our perennial yield is consistent.
Okay. Well, thank you. I have a few more questions.
Could I ask Howard a question?
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Gray. Sorry to interrupt. Okay. Ms. Howard, you mentioned you live on Jardine Road. How has your well been performing?
Well, unfortunately, I don't have the benefit of a long-term level measuring program. We just started that, and it's about 200 feet.
Do you know if your home currently has all the water-efficient appliances and plumbing fixtures?
We do our best. We have the 1.6 gallons per flush. We have the low flow shower head. My husband works for PG&E, so we're kind of a water energy efficiency kind of.
Well, good for you. Thank you. Thank you very much.
But with our comfort level at the same time.
Thank you.
Ms. Howard, stay close. There may be some more questions that you'd be best placed to answer.
Okay, next question for Mr. Conger. I believe one of the mitigations, lost my train of thought there for a second. One of the mitigations that the applicant is proposing is, and maybe it's not even posed as a mitigation, but I read in the staff report where a water company will be the entity that provides water to these 18 homes. Is that correct?
Yes, it would be a state small water company that would provide water service to the residents.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the Commission, Commissioner O'Grady. I'm James Caruso with the Department of Planning and Building. Generally, we can take a little bit of history from ag clusters, which I'm trying to get from the back of my brain to the front. I think generally they've set up mutual water companies. Mutual water company is usually the developer or whoever the successor in interest is. Whether they get set up to, well, I guess my answer is more of a question. I suppose you could set up a condition, a water provider, be it a problem, as I said, they're usually set up as mutuals, to require them to meter, monitor, and actually charge for water. You know, how that would be done and what they would base that on is a little bit difficult to understand. You usually use water rates as your primary conservation tool.
Exactly.
I'm trying to figure out how a mutual, I suppose a mutual could charge some type of, or set up some type of what's called a conservation rate structure. They're generally four blocks, and you pay more and more for each unit of water as you move upward. But I'm not sure what they would use the money for instance, and in a municipality like a city or a water provider would use that money then to fund their water conservation activities in the entire community. They would have to figure out how to do that with a mutual. But
sure, I would like the applicant to respond to that at the chair's discretion. I'm not sure whether this is the right time to do that or later, but because I have a few other questions as well. So, but I
let's
don't.
Let's make a list then, and
okay, well that's
we
one
have
on
some
my
other
hand.
Things that okay. may be relevant to the applicant.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Caruso.
Mr. Conger, you mentioned that a standard subdivision could be built on this property. I probably missed it, but could you reiterate and compare and contrast standard subdivision versus what's being proposed from a water standpoint?
Yes, standard subdivision doesn't have the required finding to affirm the sufficiency of water resources. This project could theoretically qualify for 9 standard parcels based on the soils and capability test. And presently they have 5 underlying parcels. So presently there was a previous standard subdivision done on this site. But from a water standpoint, we'd still be providing a water analysis as part of the environmental review process, but we would not be before your commission on a finding issue.
No, I understand. What I'm trying to get to is comparing water use by a standard subdivision versus water use by what's being proposed. Are they roughly equivalent, or is one a lot more than the other, or
We would estimate water use based on the, we look at the agricultural water use, and then we look at residential water use, and the tables we use to estimate residential water use don't differ between a standard subdivision or a cluster subdivision. However, as I did point out, only 7 or 8% of standard agricultural parcels ever get developed with a second primary, so there would theoretically be less residential density on this site, although they would have the same residential density potential.
Okay.
Excuse me, though, while you're there, that's a question I have. The
sure.
same residential potential, but I'm hearing 9 units versus 18.
9 parcels.
9 right. parcels, each of which can have 2 primary
two
residences on them.
Oh.
18 parcels, each of which can only have a single primary residence on
them. So right now there are 5 parcels, but there could be 9 parcels.
That's correct.
With potential for 2.
In addition, could be ag support on those 9 also.
Right, but that could go either way, that there would be ag support. So I think that's kind of a wash on the ag support. Not exactly, but more or less a wash. It's really the residential parcels mm-hmm. that we're looking at because they would qualify for some farm support either way.
Madam Chair, if I may, just real quickly, additionally respond to the question. I'm John Nall. I'm with the Environmental Division of the Planning Department. We have to be careful when we compare a worst-case scenario, such as a standard subdivision, to what's being proposed. Both types of applications are subject to CEQA, and if we would run into this issue of water availability with a standard subdivision. But you have to realize if we did, then we would probably be suggesting that there be a reduced number of allowable residences on a subdivision like that, or some other mitigation. And so I just want to caution you, comparing the proposed project with what could be, because what could be is not obvious at this point, given the constraints.
Thank you, Mr. Nolan.
With a standard subdivision project, it's possible we would get to an EIR.
Yes, sir, it is possible.
Okay,
in this case.
And that was my next question for Mr. Conger, was I'd ask the applicant about would an EIR further illuminate the water issues that we had here, and the applicant responded, yes, he thought so. What are your thoughts on that?
An environmental impact report would certainly give us a little bit more insight on the water situation. We'd most likely have a peer review done of the CLEAS report that was submitted by the applicant. However, our anticipation is that the peer review would either wind up concluding the same conclusions that the groundwater basin studies have reached, or it would express uncertainty. We're not anticipating that a peer review would change the picture that's already been painted.
Thank you, Mr. Carter.
Okay, that just finishes
up. If I could just follow up on that one point.
just brief.
It will be brief, because it was in the staff report on 3-3 about bringing a disapproval, the top of page 3-3 about, and I'm in total agreement with this. I've argued this the last year that I was here, about bringing a project forward sooner than later if it's not supportable by staff. And, you know, I think after all the discussion's been here today and after the experience that the applicant's been through, I think that's their business decision if they would like to go forward from this point on, and knowing that staff's not in support. So I know that does apply, and I'm grateful that staff recognizes that issue, but at this point I think that would be the applicant's decision if they want to risk going forward.
Okay, with that, thank you. We'll take a break, and then we'll come back to Commissioner Christensen's questions at 10:45. Right now, still, Commissioner Christensen, did you have some more questions for staff?
I did have a question. I'm gonna hold most of my questions because I think they're of interest, but not necessarily dispositive of a decision. okay, so my question is for Mr. Conger, and it goes to his original staff report of March 25th, and it's page 3-6, his table on the increase in
water usage. And the way I'm looking at it is we have to make this finding, so we have to basically figure about water adequacy. So we have to figure out what amount of existing and proposed water use there'll be so we can tell if the mitigations will address it. That's kind of where we're at. So this is the table that talks about what the existing and proposed water use is. And from what I understand, and that's why I'm asking the question, is just to make sure I'm absolutely clear, because there certainly is lots more discussion in all of the materials we have regarding what the water usage is. But the net increase under CLEAF and with the county is basically down at the very bottom, 138 versus 136.
That's our assessment, correct?
Yes, and that's basically what the applicants are agreeing with, at least CLEAF, I think.
As Mr. Cleef pointed out in his testimony, this is for the project without any mitigations imposed upon it.
Right, and that's the whole point of mitigations, is you're going to try to bring it down. All right. So then, what I never got to was where, maybe now this is a question for applicant, I saw the applicant talk a lot about the mitigations for the residential areas, landscaping and everything, but I never got an idea that we were actually ever mitigating for 136 or 138, is it acre feet that we're talking about?
Yeah, these are acre feet per year.
Acre feet per year.
The applicant's mitigation focused on an 11 acre foot number, which is based on their the CLEAF report assumed, I think, between 22 and, oh no, about 30.6 acre feet per year. As a base level, and then applied mitigation measures, specifically the landscaping limitations, to 0.12 acres. And after applying those mitigation measures, they brought the residential net increase down to about 11.3 acre feet, I believe, per year per resident. No, not per resident, excuse me, per year for the entire
residence.
And that was the number that they used to then go and look at off-site mitigation.
Correct. But my understanding of the finding we have to make regarding ag clusters is that, here's our finding for this at Zion Times, the water resources and all necessary services are adequate to serve the proposed development, including residential uses, as well as existing and proposed agricultural operations. So it isn't just the residential increase, whatever that is, it's also proposed ag, which they propose changes to the ag, and so we get to these 100 plus acre feet. No one's talked about that.
That's correct.
Okay. Well, isn't that kind of, I mean, it's one thing to talk about mitigations for 11 acre feet, or I'm going to stop right there until I think some more.
Okay. Are there any more specific technical questions, Commissioner O'Grady? Questions?
Is the recently adopted, is there anything in the recently adopted conservation and open space element, which was approved, I guess, Tuesday by the board, is there anything in there that would affect your report and analysis of this project?
On page 3-11 of the March 25th staff report, we actually did do a little bit of discussion on the policies that were in the draft conservation element as it existed at that time. I understand that there weren't very many significant changes made to the water resources section, but I'm not certain if there were any major changes made.
Madam Chair, this is Jim Orton from County Council's office. If I could add that, because this is a subdivision that has an application that was accepted as complete on August 5th, 2009, we're required to apply the rules in effect on that date. August 5th, 2009. So that's why staff indicated that they analyzed it in relationship to the old conservation element. So I just wanted to make it clear.
Thank you for that clarification, Mr. Orton.
Okay, last question. Mr. Conger, you mentioned that another problem was that here we are looking at one project when the problem, perhaps the elephant in the room, requires a not a project by project solution, but a global solution. Is there any language in the ordinances that to this particular problem. I believe you said, well, he could wait, but he's not required to wait to submit the project. Is that correct?
In the same March 25th staff report, page 3-13, we actually listed some of the options that we had given the applicant.
Right.
One was that they withdraw the project and resubmit after the groundwater basin study and the management program are underway. One is that they take away the project and just keep the five existing legal underlying standard parcels that they have, and then another one would be to redesign as a nine-lot subdivision, although we point out with that nine-lot subdivision, there's still some potential issues with Ag Policy 11 and water resources that we would need to consider as well.
And the commission certainly can't tell the applicant to wait until this gets resolved globally.
The project could, in theory, be continued and held in abeyance until it gets resolved, although historically we've not done that on subdivisions because of some of the Permit Streamlining Act and timing requirements that are imposed by the Subdivision Map Act.
Well, presumably we need a reason in order to do that. And
there could be legal problems.
Thank you. That answers my question. Thank you.
Okay, with that, Commissioner O'Grady, that ends our questions here. So what I'm hearing are two primary issues. I'm hearing, first of all, the issue about the required findings, that there's adequate water supply to serve this project, which, as we've heard from staff, is, you know, a required special finding of this cluster subdivision. It's not a finding required on all projects, so it wouldn't preclude other projects. Secondarily, I'm hearing the kind of general issue then on whether we are, you know, kind of okay going. We've heard already Commissioner White has weighed in on whether we're okay with kind of project scale private mitigation measures, whether those are appropriate versus a more proactive kind of municipal level approach to handling the water mitigation issues. So really, I think those are two questions before us, you know, that this project raises. I have heard a couple questions directed to the applicant that we haven't answered yet, and so I don't know if the commissioners who initially raised those want to hear from the applicant or not, given these. I heard the question about mutual water company rate structure, rate tiering, that Commissioner White asked earlier, and I heard a question about the mitigation for the total project water impact.
I have one more question.
Okay, to the applicant,
yes,
or to staff? So if we could maybe bring one of the applicant's representatives up, and let's go to those questions then. There was the question about the possibility with a mutual water company to use a strategy of rate tiering to ensure that water use would be minimized.
Good morning. Again, for the record, my name is Jamie Kirk, and to answer the questions regarding the water company, I think it would be responsible thing to do.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Kirk. Other question then was regarding...
Could I follow up with that particular
yes,
thing? So the applicant would be agreeable to providing the county with, say, monthly water consumption information so that the county then, working together with your water company, can examine that over time and determine whether the contemplated and conditioned mitigation monitoring is really having the desired effect, and if not, then it could be steps could be taken to address that. Is that
right? And I think it could be served as that model project as the county probably moves forward through the Paso Robles groundwater basin update as looking at how to monitor and what types of mitigation measures do work. This could be the test case project of what's working, because we're amenable to having the water metered and reporting to the county and working with the county on solutions.
So that was a yes,
yes.
The applicant would would provide the data to the county.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, and we had another question then about mitigations for the total project. That was Commissioner Christensen's. That you initially directed the applicant. Did you want to follow up on that?
I actually had a question about the applicant's reading of the FUGRO 2010 report that just came, so maybe somebody else.
Yeah, that would not be me.
So let me ask it, well, and then somebody can answer it.
Okay.
I understand that the applicant has been very forthright in talking about the fundamental disconnect between this idea that there may be some surplus of water and yet there's lowering groundwater levels all for years. But the Fugro report, the very first summary and conclusion they say they make is that the water balance calculations presented in this report show that demand in both the Atascadero sub-basin and the Paso Robles groundwater basin as a whole is approaching the average annual perennial yield. Given the degree of uncertainty of the estimates of inflow and outflow components of the water balance equation, the basin should be considered to be essentially in balance by a small margin. So I'm not sure where applicant's expert gets the idea that Fugro doesn't, you know, it says that there's a surplus or that there's water. It doesn't say that. Their very first conclusion says that there's it's either on balance or there's a very small margin of balance. So,
and I would like to bring Mr. Scalmanini up to the podium to answer that question.
They misstate their own report. It happens. I mean, I read the rest of the report, but I'm looking at this. So.
Well, I'm going to have to look for the text. I focused
it's on page...
I know where the text
yes.
is that you just
top
read.
Top of page 16.
You know, my main focus was on their tables 3, 4... And I think I can find text to support it, but I'm not 100% sure I can do it on my feet. And then there's table 14. Okay, tables 3 and 4 summarize that the cumulative storage change, 3 and 4 have to do with the period of time from 1998 to 2009. And if you go to the far right side at the bottom of the column is the cumulative change in storage. Tables 3 and 4 embed two different assumptions for the amount of rural slash small community groundwater pumping. Okay. But the results are that over the time period 1998 through 2009, that with the smaller assumed rural small community groundwater pumping, that the basin accrued 229,292 acre feet of storage increase over that time period. And with the larger assumed rural small community groundwater pumping, that would be on table 4, the basin accrued over the same time period 202,834 acre feet of increased groundwater storage. If you turn to table 14, it's a similar format to the two tables I just referred to, but it's a projection from this year 2010 through 2025 with a set of, call it documented summaries of the work that's reported in the text of inflows and outflows for the various components of inflow and outflow. And if you look at that table, again, the lower right-hand corner of the far right part of the table, that it projects that groundwater storage will increase over the next 15 years through the year 2025 by 406,943 acre feet. Okay. Now, you could go through and you can, you know, interpret text like being close to and things like that. What I did was go into the numbers and look at how much pumping stress did they embed when they did their analysis. So now you could use any kind of adjective you want to say close to or approximately equal to or a little bit less than. You could put a lot of different words in to describe that, but those are the numbers that are in this report.
So you would say that their summary statement is a little vague considering their own numbers, or a little broad.
Let me look at it one more time.
Yeah.
You look at the whole package of the reports that Mr. Conger had listed up here, and you look back in time at what's been an estimate of groundwater pumping in the last several, well, I don't want to say decades, but certainly decade plus, okay? That there's been a there's been a reported increase. So pumping is going in the direction of the perennial yield number. So to say it's approaching, you know, or going in that direction, yeah, that would be an accurate statement. But as far as numbers go, how close is it? You know, percentages are nice. be honest, I think the percentages are improperly calculated because the wrong numbers were used to calculate the percentage, both by staff and by FUGRO, ironically. They didn't comply with their own definition.
Okay?
But that said, you know, it is in the 90-plus percent category, yes. But 10% of 97,700-acre-feet is 9,700-acre-feet. And so, you know, close is relative, or approaching is relative.
Or small margin is relative.
All those things.
And so that's the question before us, really.
Right.
And making this finding,
the water resources
are adequate, is that closeness of 1% to 6% too close? I mean, do we call that adequate or inadequate? That's the question. Some of us would want to err on the side of being conservative and say that's awfully close, and we know the trends are for usage to go up, and we need to look long term, and that doesn't look to be adequate on a conservative side. On a less conservative, more liberal side, well, sure, maybe there's a little less, and it's not out, and maybe it's okay. That's the decision ahead of us here. So, Commissioner White, you want to...
Well, I think what we've heard here today is the applicant would like the opportunity to help us make that finding, along working with staff and trying to get more data and more information to give us what we need to do that. You know, I mean, if there's historical pumping and they can show, again, the 2-to-1 offset to where it's a benefit to the basin, then and it can adequately be shown that we're what's being proposed is beneficial to the basin with real tangible mitigation beyond the landscape and the agricultural elements of it. Again, that would be icing on the cake, and that I think that's something I would be able to support as far as the water issue goes. You know, I really do look at this as an opportunity. I'm concerned if we push towards that 5-parcel, there come a point where the applicant's going to throw up their hands and say, we'll just go with the 5-parcel alternative. And if we're really concerned about what's beneficial to the basin and the overall water situation and agriculture, I think we have an opportunity here that we shouldn't let get by us. So that's why I'm willing to suggest that we let the applicant move forward and bring back, if they're willing to do that and make that business decision, and bring back the information we need to help us make that finding, along with working with staff. At this point, I can't feel comfortable supporting an outright denial.
Okay, so with that as one case, I have a feeling that there may be some others. So other commissioners want to weigh in then and make any other case?
I think staff has done a really good job at explaining an albeit rather complicated and elusive subject here, this water that's hidden under the ground. And I think the applicant has done a good job in pointing out some of the catch-22s that may be involved with mitigation measures and how do they do a go forward with an approvable ag cluster project. And my questions that I asked both of Mr. Conger and the applicant earlier about the environmental impact report and whether that would help us provide additional information that would illuminate these issues more thoroughly. They answered in the affirmative. And so I would appreciate the benefit of having such a report. I also think it's a matter of due process, which I think is extremely important for a public process like this. So I'm inclined at this point anyway to decline the county's the staff's position on this. But I am interested in hearing other commissioners and their points of view before we vote.
Thank you.
Policy 11, that we cannot restrict agriculture use, allowing residential use to restrict agriculture use.
Correct. The actual text of the policy is maintain water resources for production agriculture, both in quality and quantity, so as to prevent the loss of agriculture due to competition for water from urban and suburban development. It's consistently a quandary with agricultural cluster development where you are in fact creating urban or suburban development in the midst of agriculture. It, somewhat flies in the very face of Ag Policy 11, no matter how you look at it. And I do think we've had very specific concerns about the idea that the project that the applicants have brought forward now include as mitigations restrictions on the agricultural water use as part of how they're going to not increase the water use on this site, especially in light of the requirement that they actually have enough water to irrigate more acreage than is currently planted. That too is a bit of a catch-22 in our minds, and we really don't think the county ultimately is going to place any restrictions on agricultural water use. It's not entirely clear, even if we can, as an overlying water user, if we can restrict their water rights in that way. Maybe we can, but as a matter of public policy, I'm not sure we want to. I'm not sure how feasible it is that we would say, here's how much water they have to use for their crops, and the county's going to show up and shut down their wells if they use more than that. Ultimately, that is a question moving forward for this project.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions while Mr. Eisensee is up? Clear enough? Thank you, Mr. Eisensee. Mr. Melskow, then, would that suggest that you do see some conflict then with that AGP 11 and some issue then making the finding and seeing a conflict then with the residential and ag use? Okay. Commissioner Christensen, I'm going to weigh in then. It's decision time.
Well, my question is, do we need to make this finding in order to have this project go forward in any way? In other words, to have the EIR, do we have to make that finding? No, we don't. Okay.
Ultimately, you will have to make that finding if you want to approve the project, but not to request that the environmental review be completed.
So we could, just to make sure I'm clear, so it is an option before us to agree that it's quite likely we wouldn't be able to make this finding, but if the applicant chooses to proceed with an EIR, that we would not deny the project today.
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Okay. Well, that's kind of, I'll be upfront, I completely agree with staff's evaluation. I think even the applicant continues to talk about the fact that there's a fundamental disconnect between whatever the reports say and the fact that there isn't any groundwater. It's dropping. So I think, and personally, that we're going to get all the way through this if the applicant decides to do that, and we're not going to be able to, I don't think I'll ever be able to be sure enough to make that finding personally. I haven't seen any EIR, I haven't seen any evaluation, so I could be completely wrong. But I am also not sure that I can't make the finding. And the question's about whether or not an EIR analysis could not only come up with a better idea of exactly how much water we're talking about, but also come up with a better idea of exactly how real, true, enforceable, county acceptable mitigations could actually work. I don't think that's been explored enough. I think that the arguments that the applicant made against county's analysis were not good. but I think that maybe this hearing is expose a little bit more about where the county is at and where this commission might end up being. So, if they want to give it a shot, I wouldn't spend my money on an EIR at this point, but anyway, I would support a motion to recommend for.
Okay.
At this point, without hearing your argument,
yeah.
What do you have to say?
Let's save it for last here. Interesting to say that I agree with everything I've heard here. Completely. I think the main issue here is long-term water availability and the uncertainty of what the reports say. I think we all agree that it's uncertain. And so to me, that question of whether the balance is there, and I would hesitate to lead the applicant down a path of spending the money and pursuing this EIR. given these realities. So I'm not strong on this, but it seems to me a wasted
process. Yeah, I agree 100% as far as leading anyone down a path, and so I think the issue before us as to whether move to accept the county's recommendation or to deny it, period. And then the county staff report pointed out the options that were available to the applicant that he could pursue, independent upon whatever this body might think. And I don't know enough about his business concerns to constrain that. And so I certainly wouldn't vote for a measure that did that.
Well, so excuse me, I'm just hearing a contradiction. The applicant has options despite this project proposal.
No, what I thought I heard earlier from Commissioner Christensen and perhaps you was that you would want a motion that denied staff's recommendation, but at the same time said we want an EIR.
No, I guess I'm going down the path of being more inclined to follow staff's recommendation and deny the project, because I would hate to lead this applicant down a path that I don't see allowing for a project. And secondarily, the other issue here is whether we want to encourage this private project scale water mitigation program. And my experience with water use and conservation has been that one person can go in with gusto, but keeping up these sort of private project level programs is difficult, and it would behoove us to look more at municipal scale programs for water conservation rather than piecemealing. As staff has detailed the difficulties of this, of monitoring these mitigations, and the conflicts then, for example, with the Paso Robles City mitigation measures, these may be mitigations that the city may already enact on their own, and it may well be more efficient for the city to enact these measures within their own municipal system of programs rather than having to deal with a private concern, again, piecemealing these measures, and keep up with that monitoring and measuring and reporting. So I don't think this is the best way to go, even though it's possible and could be done as the applicant has suggested, and I appreciate the attempt to find creative ways to do this. I don't think it's the best way to go, and I don't want to allow this suggestion that we're going to go that way. So yeah. I would move that we follow staff's recommendation and deny this project. Yes.
Second.
And so discussion?
Yeah.
Let's just open it up with the commissioner from the district.
Well, yeah, I've laid out my position, but just to reiterate again, if we're basing our the adequate test on Fugro's report, as Mr. Salmini pointed out with Commissioner Christensen's question, there is a reserve, and it's all relative to the vast quantities. And this use here, as proposed with no mitigation, is a small fraction of what is estimated to be remaining in the basin to keep a balance with perennial yield. And so right there allows us to make the finding, in my judgment. But beyond that, we have a willing applicant that's willing to do their part to help attribute to less draw on the basin, to actually increase leftover water, for lack of a better term, than what they're drawing currently. By some tangible mitigation. And they know by our discussions, and that's their business decision to go forward. So I think the finding can be made, and I think the applicant deserves the opportunity to work with staff and give us that opportunity. I think the finding could be made today, again, because of the Fugro report. As Mr. Salmini pointed out, there's excess water in the basin.
Okay. Other comments, discussion, Harris? We have a motion and a second.
Yeah, I ran some numbers, and you know how much water we're talking about here? How little water we're talking about here? The residential component would use 0.0001 of a basin. Now, I really have a problem with, we're talking about uncertainty here. Well, we're certain that it's an extremely small amount. And you're talking about denying a project without the benefit of the further analysis that an environment, including mitigation measures, that you're just deciding right now, Commissioner Wyatt, that are not worthwhile. And I just would submit that this commission could make a much more informed decision if we had an environmental impact report. And if the applicant chooses not to provide one, that's their business. So I don't see a downside for the public in allowing the due process to proceed.
To follow up on that, the downside to the public, if we do deny this, in my opinion, is that the applicant will be pushed towards the five-lot option, and that is going to be more of a drain, unmitigated, unmonitored drain on that basin. And if we're truly trying to preserve agriculture, and we want to keep this 95% of this parcel intact for real agriculture, I mean, for the life of me, I can't even understand why the applicant doesn't just abandon this idea and go that direction. I'm grateful that they're here trying to pioneer this and trying to help the situation in the basin. I think we'd be pushing them in a direction that would be ultimately more detrimental to the basin if we deny this. And that's my opinion from everything I've seen here. And if they choose to go forward and try to provide us more information and continue...
I certainly understand where our chair is, her statement, and I definitely understand where staff has come from, and I appreciate the fact that we're having this discussion now as opposed to after an EIR has actually already been done and spent, the money's been spent, and the time has been spent. But I'm just not sure enough that I absolutely cannot make that finding ever. So
with that, I appreciate the discussion and the comments. The conflict is shared, that I understand and fully appreciate that the standard path may be the ready to go. Yeah, but just as a last comment, I would remind Commissioner O'Grady's and my other colleagues and everyone out there that this is a small percentage of the water use and a relatively small development. But what we see is we see a whole lot coming through, a few at a time, and we get where we get, and then we look back and wondered how we got there, and we got there a few at a time. And that's why we need to think ahead of these things.
And I also agree with that. And again, if they can actually come up with mitigations that work, then all the more power to them. But I also look at the original idea of what the ag cluster ordinance was meant to do. And I agree with staff's statement that originally this was going to be a pretty good ag cluster. It's located appropriately. It's situated appropriately. It does preserve the rest of this ag parcel forever. There won't be any more growth on it. As Commissioner White has pointed out, you know, it could actually end up preserving more ag than not. So in that sense, that is the only reason why I'm willing to...
And preserving more water.
Yeah.
So you know, we talk about this incremental...
That's why.
We talk about this incremental degrading. This could be an incremental benefit. That's what the applicant's proposing here. And for me to support it, it's going to have to be obvious that it is an incremental benefit to the basin.
So noted. I just think that chance is so small, and that going at it as a proactive municipal approach, as staff suggests,
maybe
would be the more prudent way to go.
Maybe by the time the EIR is even thought about, the groundwater management plan will be...
You know, and I do appreciate staff's... I do appreciate, Mr. Conger, I wanted to take this opportunity. I do appreciate staff's hard work, and I agreed with a lot of what's in the staff report. It is a dilemma, and water is a huge issue. As Ms. Love pointed out, that there's... other parcels that need this water also. So anything, if this project can bring a benefit to that situation, that's what I'm looking for. So maybe we can't get there. That's a decision the applicant will have to make.
Okay. So with that, let's take a roll call vote. We have a motion and a second.
Chairperson Wyatt?
Yes.
Commissioner Melskow?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
No.
Commissioner O'Grady?
No.
Mr. Christensen?
No.
Okay, with that, I'll make a motion that we allow this conditional use permit SUB 2006-00138 to move forward with environmental review with documentation as we requested here today.
Okay, do we have a second?
Second. I think. Is that the way it should be?
Yeah, I'm asking for help. Is that sufficient?
I would suggest that what you're
the intent of your motion is to send it back to staff to prepare it in an environmental determination, and then when that's complete, bring it back to your commission for a decision on the conditional use permit and the track map.
Okay. Then I would say, Jim Orton from County Council's office, the other option that's available to you is to require preparation of an EIR.
So I would suggest that the motion include that, because I'm hearing very clearly from all the commissioners willing to approve this, that this is contingent on information.
That's the point I wasn't clear on.
At the bottom of it says, if your commission were to consider the project for approval, staff would recommend that the commission direct staff to prepare an EIR.
The applicant would request that?
The commission would request that staff do so. I'm hearing this potential for approval contingent on preparation of an EIR. So.
Right.
In other words, you can require the preparation of the EIR. If they disagree with that, they can appeal it to the board. Otherwise, they can go ahead and
have
the
EIR.
Well, the rest of the commission won't support that without the EIR. I just thought that that would be between staff and the applicant to determine if they felt
no,
an EIR
have
was necessary.
EIR.
Well, could I direct your attention to page 3-13 of the staff report that talks about other options that the applicant has? It seems to me that, in other words, one of them is withdraw and resubmit after completion of a groundwater basin study, which may give us the information that we need. But if we put this constraint in a motion that requires an EIR, then they would not be able to come back to us with this ag cluster project without that EIR. And I just think that's overstepping unnecessarily.
Well, as I stated earlier, I'm not so sure it would be a significant impact with the small fraction that this is proposing with what the Fugro report shows as a remainder 9,700 acre feet, I believe it was, of water remaining, estimated.
Commissioner White, after hearing Mr. Nall's comments and reading on page 3-13 about the groundwater basin study, where in fact it does say the applicant may withdraw the application and reapply after the groundwater basin study is completed, then I'm not so concerned. And so I thought you might want to consider that.
Well, I would like to have the applicant's response to that, because I'm not sure what the ramifications may be on a resubmittal, the cost and the timing. So if the applicant would speak to that.
If briefly, Ms. Kirk.
We would be in support of the motion of going forward with an environmental determination. Staff still has to go through the initial study checklist, and then with that, identify the impacts. And I think that the Planning Commission has the opportunity to recommend that there is a significant impact based on your discussions of water, but I think process-wise, ultimately, it's the Board of the Supervisors' decision to move forward authorizing an EIR. And Mr. Noll, you might want to correct. I'm just thinking of a proper process.
Actually, Ms. Kirk, only on appeal. If the environmental coordinator at a staff level determines that an EIR is required, then that is appealable to the board. On the same wavelength, if your commission determines that an EIR is necessary, that obviously is appealable to the board also. So I have a feeling that either way we'll wind up in front of the Board of Supervisors.
So if our motion, so if the motion was made as I made it, where it moves forward with environmental review at staff level, it could be determined that an environmental impact.
That's right, Commissioner White.
So it seems that we could go forward with my motion in that situation.
That would be fine. We'll work with the applicant. We'll sit down with the applicant and I'll tell them what I told you, and that is that it's staff's opinion that there is the potential for a significant impact to occur here, and that's all you need to trigger an environmental impact report. They can agree to that, and we can start the preparation, or they can disagree with that, in which case we'll take that recommendation to the board.
Well, it sounds like to expedite the process that my motion has made it sounds like staff at this point would recommend an environmental impact report anyway, but it does give the applicant one last glimmer of hope, for lack of a better term, to convince staff that maybe one's not needed. So I'd like to at least extend that to the applicant. So I'll make the motion as I did, that it moves forward the environmental study. If we can get a second and a vote on it, then if not, I can always amend the motion. So.
Okay, so we have a motion. Do we have a second?
I would second.
Okay, so opening it for discussion. Comments on that? Okay, well, I would just make one then. I've heard that two of us have moved to deny this project, and I've heard serious concerns. So I would hope at least then that my colleagues who are going to vote for this would require the EIR to be included.
I would vote for that motion, too.
I think I'll make clear where it's going to go, so I'm not really worried about it. It's a technical problem.
Madam Chair, this is Jim Orton again. One additional point is that if it goes back to staff and it gets appealed to the board, there'll be more of a record of exactly what the decision was based on. So maybe the motion that was recommended would be the best one, because then if it does get appealed to the board, there'll be a record to support it.
A record to support
the initial study will have been done with the recommendations.
Okay.
One concern I have with these actions.
Well, Madam Chair, Jim, the initial study will be done either way.
Right, but if it gets appealed to the board, there will be a staff report that will elucidate everything.
That's right. But if it gets appealed to the board, unless there's a motion that's a successful one, if I understood from our retreat, the super board may not be informed that the Planning Commission thought that an EIR was very important. And so, Commissioner White, I'm afraid I would have to change my vote on your motion and support a motion that did require the EIR. So.
Okay,
thank you,
so second has been withdrawn on the motion. Did I hear another second then?
Well, I thought I heard Mr. Horton suggest the opposite of that he supported the motion as I made it. So.
Well, he did, but I was just thanking him for bringing up the issue and reminding me that that if it goes to the board...
Move forward with an EIR.
That's where...
I'm going to weigh in because I heard Bruce say something a little bit different, and I kind of
that's why we need to make sure we have
I can
clear.
Offer that to the
that
motion maker if you like. And what I've written is simply send the project back for completion of environmental review and then bring the conditional use permit track map back to the Planning Commission for action.
Yes, that's it. Thank you.
I believe that's the motion in the second. So with that, if the clerk will please call the roll.
And that's what Commissioner
she's understanding that. Okay.
Commissioner White?
Yes.
Commissioner Christensen?
Yes.
Commissioner O'Grady?
No.
Commissioner Melskow?
Yes.
Chairperson Wyatt?
No. Okay, so with that then we have three votes to bring the project back, so that's what the applicant needed. So thank you, everyone.
Excuse me. I think another way, if this gets appealed to the board, to get our sense in, since this motion we just approved doesn't say anything about an EIR, that I would like the record to show that at least this commissioner desires an EIR for this ag cluster project.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner O'Grady, for that. Thank you to staff. With that, 20 to noon, so we will move on to our second item of the day. And if the clerk will please call that item, Mr. Hope.
If I may, just so we aren't surprised when the clock reaches the magic time, it's very possible that this one may need to go past lunch. So
that's we're all quick.
So the magic time is 12:15.
Right.
If you're not done by 12:15, then I think you should break for lunch.
Thank you, Mr. Hogue. Okay. We'll do. Ms. Hedges.
This is a hearing to consider a request by BKF Cambria LLC and AT&T Mobility for a development plan coastal development permit. County file number DRC 2009-00070, Supervisorial District Number 2, Erlyn Singwald, Project Manager.
Thank you, Mr. Singwald. Before you begin, I'll just ask if anyone has any ex parte contacts to disclose. One on this item. Okay, I just have a couple. I talked to Steve Cole two nights ago. He's Cambrian on the NCAC Land Use Committee, and I did receive an email from Joyce Renshaw, which I presume everyone received. Ramona forwarded to everyone, as well as an email from Bev Praver, which I believe everyone received in the automated comment format from the county in support of the project. Did everyone receive that email? Okay, so those are the only ex partes I have to disclose. All right, Mr. Singwald.
So, good morning, Madam Chair, members of the Commission. I'm Erlyn Singwald with the Department of Planning and Building. I have a quick PowerPoint presentation this morning. So, the project is a request by BKS Cambria LLC and AT&T Mobility for a development plan and coastal development permit to allow a wireless telecommunications facility at the former Cambria Air Force Station site just south of Cambria community. The project would consist of installing 6 panel antennas and 1 microwave dish on an existing 270-foot tall FM radio tower. It would also involve installing 3 equipment cabinets on an existing concrete slab adjacent to an existing Cellular 1 equipment shelter and associated utility trenching for power utilities. The project actually involves very minimal site disturbance. The only real new ground disturbance would be the utility trenching. As I stated, the project is located just south of the community of Cambria. It's just opposite of the Highway 46 intersection with Highway 1 on the west side of Highway 1. Here's an aerial photo of the project site relative to the community of Cambria and Highway 1 and 46. You can see the Lodge Hill neighborhood here and the Fiscalini Ranch here, and the project site is right down here. Now here's an aerial photo zoomed in a little closer on the project site. The subject property is outlined in yellow here. Again, this is the former Cambria Air Force Station site. The proposed project itself will be located on the northerly site. I should note that there are significant concerns with asbestos and lead-based paint contamination in these existing buildings, and the site has actually been quarantined and access has been restricted because of those contamination concerns, which are currently being dealt with by APCD and the Environmental Health Department. The project is in the recreation land use category, and surrounding land use categories are agriculture. This property here is actually a Coast Guard communication station here, zone public facilities. Here's the proposed site plan. This red dot is just indicating the location of the existing 270-foot tall tower. You can see here the Cellular 1 equipment shelter, and this is indicating the existing concrete slab where AT&T would locate its equipment cabinets. And this just shows that here, the proposed equipment cabinets on the slab adjacent to the Cellular 1 equipment shelter. Here's a north elevation of the tower, about 270 feet tall, existing Cellular 1 antennas. These are WIP antennas, which is the older technology for wireless facilities. Now all the facilities use the panel antennas, which the AT&T is proposing here, and also a microwave dish here. It's a photo simulation. There's not really much to see here. The project would have a fairly minimal visual impact. One advantage of this site is the fact that due to the intervening topography, the existing tower, even though it's 270 feet tall, it's not very visible from Highway 1. There are certain angles and certain stretches of the highway where you can see it, but for the most part, it's screened by topography. I believe the only place where you can see the full extent of the tower height is from Highway 46, heading towards the coast. So we're back to the limitation on use plan area standard. There is such a standard, the North Coast Area Plan, applying to this project. I included the language in your staff report, and it's here again. It does not include a communications facility as one of the allowed uses on the property, which is why staff is not able to support this project. As the Bartleton AT&T project that we were discussing just a few weeks ago, really, you know, staff has told the applicant that the appropriate process in this case is a general plan amendment, and for this project, it also includes a local coastal program amendment, which would have to go to the Coastal Commission for certification. I'll also point out here another part of this plan area standard requires development plan review for any project at the site. That's actually why we're before the commission today. The proposed project would be a co-location project, and co-location projects typically require a minor use permit, which just goes to a planning department hearing officer. But pursuant to this plan area standard, we're here with a development plan before your commission. So to conclude, as I stated, the project does generally comply with our screening standards. It's a co-location, which is strongly encouraged by our ordinance. However, it's not an allowed use on the site, which is why we're recommending a general plan amendment. We're recommending denial of the project and explain that the appropriate process is a general plan amendment. As with the Bartleson case, an alternative action would be to determine that the limitation on use standard does not apply to the project, in which case the commission would need to continue the project to allow staff to complete an environmental determination and return with conditions of approval. And that concludes my comments. I'm available for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Singelwald. Questions? Technical questions?
I got a quick one.
Okay.
How did this get zoned recreational with asbestos on the site?
I think the short answer is it was done at a time when that hazard was not known.
Okay.
It was in 1988 when it was designated recreation. The idea was it was an ideal site for some sort of visitor-serving use, like the uses that are described. But also, I mean, any development on the site is going to need to remediate the hazards.
Okay.
Commissioner O'Grady.
Yes. Is the upper portion of the communications tower, existing tower, above the cellular one WIP antennas being used for anything?
I'll go back to the elevation. It looks like there's a microwave dish above the cellular one antennas, and the whole lattice tower structure itself is FM radio tower. Yeah, I believe it is from the Coast Guard station, and it would be a pretty substantial length. I don't have the exact length on hand. I know they do have technology now to actually bore utilities, which has much less impact than digging a trench. So that would be an option. We really didn't get to the point of looking at the project's impacts because we don't consider it an allowed use in the first place.
Right, okay, so maybe the applicant can just speak to that. I'll hold off on other questions then. So anything else the commissioners are thinking of at this point? Okay, so with that, I'll open it up to the applicant. I see Ms. Knight here. Ms. Knight, if you will fill out a speaker slip when you're done.
Absolutely.
I also have a speaker slip from Mr. Schaefer, who I believe is the property owner. And so do you want to share your time with Mr. Schaefer's, or did he want to take 3 minutes?
Can I go ahead and utilize
minutes?
All of my time, and then he can, at the public comment stage, would that be
right,
appropriate?
Right, so you can do what you need to in 12 minutes or less. How much time do you expect?
I think I only need about five to six minutes. I've got a small PowerPoint presentation and just a touch
okay,
based on a couple
so
of
so if
this.
We can, Madam Clerk, if you'll put on for 10, that should allow a little extra.
Great.
And then we'll put Mr. Schaefer's on next.
Good morning. My name is Tricia Knight. I'm representing AT&T this morning. almost afternoon. Let's see, touching base on just a couple of things. As you know, I was before you here a couple weeks ago on a similar limitation of use, and I'm just hoping that we can all look on this on more of a case-by-case basis instead of an overall ordinance interpretation. This does differ significantly from the last time I was here, being that we have an existing structure that is already an accessory use. And so we are just asking to be able to utilize that and come back before you with the full development plan for the project and just move it forward. Erlyn, if you wouldn't mind. Did want to make sure that to answer to your question, on the top portion of the tower, there is the school district, an ambulatory service, and Cambria Towing Company that have communication antennas on that tower. So it already provides those services as it is now. And then the Cambria Advisory Council was out to visit the site 2 weeks ago and was in full support of the project as well. Is it opening? Okay. I was thinking that it might have had problems. Let's see. And so wanted to answer any specific questions that you might have. It sounded like maybe the trenching length were approximately 600 feet. We can use the boring technology to reduce the ground disturbance. We are required to do a biological botanical assessment as well as an archaeological assessment as part of the environment review, correct? If we were to move forward with the project. So I don't know if that answers. But, and then to answer any specific questions that you might have for me.
Anybody more specific questions? Commissioner O'Grady?
I heard you say that the school district relies on the tower for communications.
That is correct.
But I was still focusing on it, and I didn't hear the others.
There's an ambulatory service for Cambria that relies on that tower for communications.
And they're currently, it's not
they
an old use, they are currently using it.
That is their primary.
And then there was another one?
It's for Cambria Towing, so if anyone needs a towing service, they utilize the local company for those purposes. And then, of course, Cellular One is also on the tower as well. And there is, I think it's K-Otter? Used to be K-Otter? Okay, K-Pig. So those are the existing.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Ms. Knight, are you going on with your scheduled presentation now that it's up?
Now that it's up, I was thinking, just revisiting.
See where you're at.
This is a little bit more similar to the Sea Pines Golf Course, where we actually had an existing use on site that is an accessory use to what's already there. So that differs, once again, from the Bartleson and a little more similar to the Sea Pines that's been before you before. Next slide, Erlyn. And once again, just reiterating that telecommunication facilities are, in fact, classified by the federal government, CAL FIRE, as infrastructure and a public utility. And so, let's see, next slide, Erlyn. And that a lot of these limitations of use were adopted in the 1980s. This tower was built in the 1980s, prior to when telecommunications were really not such a part of our landscape as they are today. And that the general plan amendment, being that it is in the coastal zone, would take approximately 18 months to 2 years to process. And the reason that we had not located on the existing facility 1,000 feet away is that there are three carriers on there now, and that tower actually came down in height years ago to the height that it's at now, and it doesn't allow for any height increases or additional carriers. So there's three on there now. They're stacked very far. Any lower than that, the topography becomes an obstacle, and it simply just can't clear it. So even though, yes, it is a site, it's not really a co-locatable site because tower height increases.
We have two radio stations on the tower, and as you may remember, you know, Verizon was on the tower for, I think, about 10 years, and they relocated. So, you know, in my eyes, it's just a replacement of a use that has been there for I don't know how many times. They ceased their operations in 2005. But I think before that, there may have been the 10, 15 years. I think we should use common sense. There is no downside to any public interest. There's only an upside. If you're stranded somewhere in the area and you have no cell connection, you may be in a certain danger unnecessarily. So my question would be, let's use common sense. let's increase public service, and please approve the application. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next up, we have Priscilla Mikesell. Following Ms. Mikesell, we have Ken Renshaw.
3 minutes. Hello, my name is Priscilla Mikesell. I've been a realtor, and I'm the assistant director of the Teen Center in Cambria. I've lived there for 31 years. I am in support of the applicant's proposal. I believe that the project should move forward, and whatever you can do to facilitate that so that it's not a long, drawn-out process. I've experienced many storms in Cambria. I've experienced floods where we were cut off from Highway 1 in 1995. We didn't even have cellular phones then. We sure would have loved to have had them because our families didn't know how to get in touch with us because the power was out. In 2006, the home that I live in and 84 other homes were damaged, and we lost power. Our families were hearing news reports, and they didn't know how we were doing. And since I work at the local teen center, and on occasion the power has gone out, both the kids there were worried, and their parents didn't know exactly what was going on. I believe that whatever environmental concerns had gone on before with Cambrians about the cell tower location are totally mitigated by the fact that this will be located at the old Air Force housing base. All of this can do is benefit the community. Because I'm a realtor, I've experienced many clients who were trying to either do their business or reach their families in Cambria. At one end of Main Street, they could talk on their cell phones. At the other end, they couldn't. If they tried to conduct business, they were unable to. So I can see possible reason why both the safety of our community and the commerce that can go on because of this should be jeopardized, and the fact that the ambulance service and the towing service and the radio stations are already using it, I can see no other ill effect. So I totally support AT&T and the applicant's application. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Mikesell. Mr. Renshaw.
Yes, I'm Ken Renshaw. I'm a resident of Cambria, and I'm a retired telecommunications engineer. I'm speaking because I personally would like to see the 3G service that AT&T will offer in Cambria, because I'd like to be able to use a 3G iPad there, like many other people. I don't understand why this matters before you as a land use issue. The subject building and tower holds an existing cell site, a radio broadcast station, and other things, as they've just outlined. AT&T will only be a new tenant at an existing facility. AT&T is leasing square feet and tower space at an existing facility. The staff report is treating this matter as though AT&T is proposing a new physical cell site or a new use of the land. The facility will only change the addition of three equipment cabinets, as you heard, and some antennas on the poles. The land use is not being expanded. What is being expanded is the radio frequency energy radiated from the tower. As you know, what is radiated from the facility is not a purview of the county. That's the responsibility of the FCC and not subject to local regulation. People with self-service contracts with AT currently in Cambria already are provided service from this facility through arrangements with an existing tenant of the site. If AT&T is expanding their radios...
Errol Tingwall, planning staff. Well, it's a land use issue because the proposed AT&T communications facility, it's a new facility. It requires a land use permit to be established on the site. And I want to point out, too, I'm very far from an expert in the technology here, but there is a a difference between using an existing radio tower to provide services to different entities, say, you know, KPIG, the school district, and a towing company. I'm not sure how it works, but they're able to use the existing tower to provide those different, you know, FCC wavelengths. But a wireless communications facility, all it's getting out of the tower is the height. The new antennas that are being added to that tower is what will be transmitting the frequency for AT&T. They're only getting height out of the tower. So I think that's an important distinction.
So your distinction is it's new stuff up there, which is what makes it a land use concern.
Right.
It's new physical stuff with mass, not just a computer program.
It's not just adding a new service to that existing tower. The AT&T is taking advantage of the height of the tower to get their new antennas up and shooting Highway 1.
Okay. Thank you for that. So with that, I'm going to just take us to 12:15 and see how far we get. Maybe if we're quick, we can get there. So if the other commissioners will indulge me. Did other technical questions then?
No, and maybe that's what you said. I was just suggesting that I don't think we'll have a problem finishing by 1:30, and that would save at least $300 as opposed to breaking for lunch. And then coming back at 1:30.
Even
so,
if we did need to go a little past 12:15,
we could go all the way. If that's the worst, we will save at least $300 according to the analysis. Even if we go all the way to 1:30.
Watching your pay.
Actually, Commissioner O'Grady, you're partly right. It's 1 o'clock. After 1 o'clock, then the overtime kicks us to more than the 3 o'clock closing time.
Okay, so I'm guessing we're going to be able to handle this in the next hour. Other commissioners comfortable staying through and seeing if we can? We have no items after this, so housekeeping here at lunchtime, seeing if we can get through this and save a few pennies for the county budget besides. Okay, so with that, other questions then for staff? Any other questions, general questions? Okay, well, it being my district, then I'll make a couple of comments. What we're seeing here, public comment has come in all supporting the project. We haven't received any unfavorable comment and any other reasons not to approve this project. We're seeing questions about whether it's an accessory use like Sea Pines. I'd have to say that I don't see this as an accessory use like Sea Pines because we do not have an established already kind of recreational use on the site. We do have a use, but basically our allowed use now is just as one or two home sites. And so calling this an accessory use like Sea Pines I don't think is quite valid. The other question we have is whether this is just an expansion of an existing use, and I think that is true. We already have a tower there, antennas and things happening in some cell service. But I guess the problem there is that some would say this just shouldn't matter because it's just an expansion. But as staff has pointed out, it's a non-conforming use, and I think the expansion does indeed pose some problems. So even though it might seem like not a big deal, the whole point of expanding uses, if they're non-conforming, is to make them conform, which we need to do here. Public safety and public service has been called into play. All the comments that we've received have referred to the, you know, lack of service, which any of us who live up there well know. There are lots of areas of town and the highway that don't get decent service, so that is an issue. In the end, as Mr. Schaffers has pointed out, we have a kind of conflict between common sense and our code. Everybody wants this project, as far as I can tell, and I'm guessing from nods from my colleagues, that there's no reason we wouldn't want this project. The problem is our code doesn't allow it. And so there we are, in the two in conflict. And it's our job to interpret and uphold our code. So when it's a case where we see that our code doesn't allow something, I think we would probably want to err toward enforcing the code. But we have seen an out just in our last projects with the, what was our last one down south in Napoleon?
Bartleson Ranch.
Bartleson Ranch. We did recommend a continuance of that project so that we could take a chance to interpret the code and possibly then allow cellular communication.
The expansion of the existing use?
That's correct. What we have is a non-conforming existing use.
Exactly.
So an expansion of that use is, it's a problem and a conflict.
Okay, Chapter 9, non-conforming uses, 2309, call your attention to 23.09.026, non-conforming uses of land. I'd like to read paragraph A, expansion of existing use. Here's what it says. The use may not be enlarged, increased, or extended. Now, here's the active point, to occupy a greater area of land than was occupied by the use on the effective date of this title, blah, 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 blah. It's the land that's being referred to. This, we are not expanding the use of land.
This is an existing tower.
And from a sustainability standpoint, I mean, you have an existing tower there, and the amount of embodied energy in that is huge. And so if the alternative is to put a tower somewhere else, I don't think that's a very environmental thing to do. And as far as reinterpreting just utility services like the wiring to your house from the or the water line from the water company, I think if you do that, you're going to create some severe problems, because then it seems to me you could consider a tower like this just an accessory use or just a, and not even come to here to permit a tower. And so I think that's a stone that we really don't want to overturn, and I don't really think we have to in order to comply with the ordinances in this particular case. And I stress, in this particular case.
Well, the point taken that the dish up on the tower wouldn't be on ground, but we are looking at some cabinets and some trenching on ground, 600 feet of trenching.
Well,
so I wouldn't consider that not on ground.
No, but it's a utility. Okay, that is not a use. That's to differentiate from a use like a communications facility. I don't believe that's what's regulated here, and they're going to use trenchless construction. So that's, the use is not occupying a greater area of land. As far as the cabinets, they go on existing concrete bases.
Well, point taken, nobody is claiming this is a huge impact.
So
I want to support Mr. O'Grady. Big surprise.
I'm just saying.
I believe
it complies with the ordinances as is.
Okay,
I can't make the finding.
But explain to me then how that's complying with 600 feet of trenching on the ground. Okay, I'll take your argument about the new cabinet being on an existing slab as not increased development, but the trenching is required for this, and that's 600 feet of impact. So how your argument takes this not on ground confounds me, I guess. It's 600 feet.
It's the distinction between an entity like a communications tower, which is a use, or a hotel, which is another use, as opposed to the utilities that are ancillary to serve those things. That what we're talking about is the use. For example, let's say on this particular facility, it already takes power, right? I mean,
But why are we proposing 600 feet of new trenching if power's already there?
Well, it may not be adequate, but to answer your question, I was going to say that, let's say, to the existing use, technology, whatever, required more power, and the existing electric service was not adequate to handle it. You wouldn't want to shut down the whole facility just because it needed a bigger service, for which you would have to put in additional electrical power.
But the argument isn't that the existing service needs more power, it's that the new service needs more power.
But I'm equating the two and giving you an example of where your logic takes you. Your logic would take you to shut down the existing use if had a trench in a new service, even to supply what's on the tower.
Okay, got it. And you're right, it would, because as a non-conforming use then with a change on the ground.
So the way I read the ordinance is it's not talking about things like the electric service or the telephone line to put a phone in the building. It's not talking about that as expanding the use. Okay. So So I hope I made that clear. Maybe I wasn't.
Admittedly, we have a very fine line here between
Madam
common
Chair.
Sense and the code.
I need to weigh in here. There is a fine line, and the fine line is non-conforming section of the ordinance. It talks about expansion of non-conforming uses of land, and it also talks about expansion of non-conforming structures.
Okay.
So the distinction here, the key issue here, is if you consider the tower just a use of land, then that is one possible path. But if you say the tower is a structure, then this isn't minor alteration or repair. It's something new being put on there, and in essence is an expansion of the structure or an alteration of the structure.
I think we would all agree it is. I don't think
we
could argue
at all.
It isn't. No, we don't all agree that?
Commissioner Wyatt, if you mount a satellite dish on your house so that you can get satellite TV, you're telling me that's an alteration of the structure? I don't think so.
I don't know how to make that comparison or that's relevant here. Mr. Jansen, did you have something to weigh in on this here as we're going? Or did you pass it on to Mr. Hogue to make him do it?
Well, I'll let him say it.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the Commission. Matt Jansen, planning staff. I couldn't resist. It was so exciting listening from across the street.
We know how it is.
Yeah. You're into the fine points of interpretation here in the LCP. And one thing I thought of, which I hope helps, but I'm not certain it will, is that framework tells us that if we have a conflict between a planning area standard and an ordinance section, that the planning area standard wins. Now, that's really easy if the words are in direct conflict with each other. It's not so easy if the ultimate result is in conflict with each other. So if you have a limitation on use planning area standard that's telling you you can't build this thing, but you're into an interpretation on the ordinance that says you might be able to, I think that's a conflict. And I think the planning area standard wins in most of those cases.
So even if we were to continue this and interpret the ordinance to allow the communications facility as utility, it still wouldn't resolve this conflict then, or the planning area standard would still supersede that?
My staff's opinion is that Mr. Singwald has already gone through that analysis. And it's almost like you just can't open the door to get there. It's like you said before, he didn't know how much trenching there was because he hasn't done any analysis on the project. We don't get to open the door to get there because it's staff's opinion that the limitation on use doesn't allow us to open the door.
And so that would still stand, what you're saying, no
correct.
Matter how a possible interpretation would come in.
I guess what I'm saying is that even if you found a way that the ordinance might allow it through Chapter 9, one of our favorite chapters, said facetiously.
Understood.
Is that we don't, it's staff's opinion that one way to look at it is that you don't even get to go there because the planning area standard doesn't allow you to go there.
Okay, thanks a lot.
If there's conflict, it wins.
Uh-huh. Okay,
what?
So that's not an out then, as you would see it.
No, it's more of a process. Fundamental.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to be honest, I don't think it's an out anyway because this is a structure, not a use of land. That's my opinion. That's how I interpret the ordinance. But Mr. Jansen is absolutely right. The framework for planning for the LCP does say that planning area standards control when there's a conflict with ordinance sections.
Okay, so the continue it option, continue it and wait for interpretation, wouldn't be a solution here as you would see it. And no matter what the outcome of that interpretation, the planning area standard would win out.
It would be a solution, but I think it's still problematic from a legal point of view. And council may want to weigh in on this, but what an interpretation would do is it would take the broader issue ultimately to the board, and the board would decide this is how you implement the ordinance. But there's only so much latitude that you get in making an interpretation. We've discussed this before on other issues, that when does it cross the line into really being an amendment? And I'm not so sure that even with the interpretation that there isn't that issue. But your commission has expressed interest in entertaining an interpretation, and the industry hasn't submitted one yet, but they could still. I just want to caution you that they might not be the total solution to the issue.
Thanks a lot. Yeah, adding complexity to this, because that was the hope, because as understood from the applicant, if to go through this GPA process would take amending however many area plans to do this, so that would be a very cumbersome process. So understanding the difficulty of that, Commissioner White.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had another question that's a broader question, is if there's anything in our code or in state law that would allow us for a public health and safety benefit to contradict our ordinances, where we're up in and say, yeah, you can put the roof back on that just blew off. Is there some sort of emergency mechanism?
Well, I think staff could respond to the ordinance provisions that we have.
There are provisions in the ordinances for emergency permits, but this does not fit that category of emergency. That's typically when there's a bridge out or your house is starting to fall into the sea and that sort of thing. Matt, you work on emergency permits more than I do. Did that answer suffice? Okay.
So my thought is, you know, if there's a way to let common sense prevail here, because, you know, if there was a vehicle accident and where there's a need for ambulance service, we have the ambulance tower there, but we don't have the cell phone ability to contact it. So it just seems like we're all struggling here to find a way for common sense to prevail.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. That's the case. So other ideas on how to do that? The applicant, Ms. Knight, come on up. You've got something that can help us.
This is basically where we ended up when we were with Sea Pines. Yes, the commission decided to allow the application to go through as an accessory use, but the point that was made was that the California Public Utilities Commission classifies this as a utility. There are, just as the golf course, there were uses that in that limitation that were very specific to golf course, hotels, motels, restaurants. It did not allow for the public utilities that were brought into the property. It was an implied use. And so, in that case, it wasn't continued to allow for an ordinance or interpretation. That interpretation was made at that time of, was that the intent of that limitation of use? Being that we have an existing structure with so many facilities there, that's the argument that we're trying to make, is that it was not the intent of that limitation to exclude these uses. They're already there. And so that's what we're asking you today. We would not request a continuance in this particular matter. We would like you to go ahead and have your discussion and make your decision, and we'll move forward at that time. But that's the same argument, even though, yes, it's slightly different. We don't have a fully functioning use such as a golf course and motel like we did at Sea Pines. But the same issue is there. If they decide to do a youth hostel or any of the other allowed uses, the utilities that are coming into that site are implied within that. So that, just a little clarification.
Thank you. And along those lines, if it were a secondary use like Sea Pines, I could more easily support that. But given that we don't have an established primary use here that necessitates it, it's a little trickier. I'm seeing it as a sort of universal desire to support this and make it happen somehow, but I'm also concerned that we don't just, I don't know, imply uses that aren't here in the allowed uses.
Is all we have to do is deny the staff's recommended action, or is there anything else that we have to do here today?
If I may, when a motion is made, may I suggest that you not say deny staff's recommendation, but actually state what it is that you want to have happen, and in which case this would be send the project back to complete an environmental review and bring it back to your commission for final action. Because we got ourselves into a bind trying to straighten out a similar motion from before. Okay, thank you.
Point taken. Yeah. So I'm hearing an inclination to to move the project forward, despite the limitations on use in the area plan, from probably a majority of my colleagues. So does someone want to make that motion? I'm not going to argue against it. I see a very clear conflict between common sense here. I'm inclined to go with the strict interpretation of our code because I think that's more a job, but I'm also troubled by the problem of not allowing something we all want to see. So did I hear a motion?
Oh, well, yeah, I tried to make one. I'll try again. I move to send this project to staff to proceed with an environmental determination. And if there was anything else Mr. Hogue suggested that I forgot.
And then after it's completed, bring it back to the commission for action.
Thank you.
Okay, do I hear a second?
Second.
Okay, and with that, if the clerk will please call the roll.
Commissioner O'Grady?
Yes.
Commissioner Christensen?
Yes.
Commissioner Milska?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Chairperson Wyatt?
Yes.
I might, if the chair will indulge me, just make one last comment. When this comes back, there will have to be findings adopted if you're choosing to approve the project.
Yeah.
And at that point, we'll have to establish the basis for why this one. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Hope, because I'm not sure we can do that, so thank you for pointing that out.